Good morning. Let's call this meeting to order, March 12th, 10 a.m. Everyone rise for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And we'd like to take roll call, please. John Armstrong.
I'm here.
Nancy Moore.
Present.
Janice Kwiatkowski. Present. Spence Edwards.
I'm here.
And Mr. Robert Swan.
Here.
All present, thank you. And let's approve the order of the agenda. Any directors have any questions?
I move that we approve the order of the agenda.
Yes. So I move that we add an emergency item for the SAFER program.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear for what?
The SAFER program, which is a fire.
Okay, thank you.
Volunteer.
I'll just let you know the need to have board action on this. The need to have board action on this prior to our next board meeting came to my attention at 15 minutes after 4 o'clock on Friday. The office was closed, the agenda was posted, the packet was distributed, and in a meeting in the county administrator's office, Andy Murphy was on his way to training in Tahoe and realized that he had not transmitted it to me, the information request, so that's being requested to be added to this agenda for action because it came to our attention after posting an agenda, and it is necessary for immediate action, should not be controversial.
Second that motion.
I second the motion that we add that item to the agenda.
Nancy
second. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Okay.
I'll third, fourth it.
That's good. Good. Okay, the motion's been accepted. Let's call for a vote, please. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that's been added to the agenda. And now, so now we approve the entire agenda?
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous. Okay. Would like to go into public comment? Members of the public are appreciated for taking the time to attend this meeting and provide comments on matters of the district business. Public comments are subject to a 3-minute time limit, 10 minutes on an individual topic. Although no action can be taken on items not listed on the agenda, please know we are carefully listening to your comments. Anyone have any comments? Yes.
At the last general meeting at 12 noon, you suddenly took a lunch break.
Yes.
Just openly. I would appreciate it if you would tell us in the future, if you can, know it's ahead of time, put it on the agenda, or at least at the beginning of the meeting, tell us that you're going to take a break, so that the audience can make plans for lunch,
okay.
Just being a last minute. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyone else? Yes.
This is a procedural issue. You have something on your agenda called the credit card, about credit card, making a resolution. That is in conflict with the district's current credit card procedure and resolution. So you may not want to do that now. You might want to table it. You're supposed to put the old resolution up there and then compare the two and have discussion.
Okay. Thank you.
Maybe you can table that one. Thank you.
Anyone else have any comments from the public? Okay, we're going to close the floor to public comments. Information items. Brief reports may be provided by district staff and or board members as information on matters of general interest. No action will be taken by the board during reports. However, items discussed may be recommended for discussion and action on a future agenda. Public comments will be taken after each report is provided. And we would like to start with the fire department report.
We stopped you up in the corner.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, good morning. My name is Jeff Sanders. I'm a stunt double for Chief Murphy this morning. For those of you who don't know me, I currently work at Baseline Conservation Camp and oversee the camp program and also our Columbia Air Tactics. Here. I've been in the Groveland area for a long time. I've seen a few faces on the board of directors that I haven't met before, but I was battalion chief here in the Groveland area for about 6 years prior to going down to Kent. So for the report, this last month there was about 3 significant calls, one being an over-the-bank search and rescue that was on Priest Strait down by Grizzly Road. Both the Amador engine and the scheduled engine were on. They also have had several structure fires in the last month, and a vehicle fire at the gas station, right at the gas pumps earlier this month too, which, you know, obviously could have been quite a dilemma. Groveland Forest Fire Station, the Amador Station, went on a total of 32 calls, and the Schedule A Station went on 66 calls. So very active month. Obviously, the weather could have had impacts on those as well, that we, you know, we had plenty of precipitation and snowfall. One thing I'd like to add, some of the fuels work that are going on in the area right now, we're currently working on Priest Cultiville Road with Tuolumne County Road Chipping. So that's, and some of those folks have seen that, it's about right at the gate where you go down into Hedgeview. We're also doing mass detection at the Gookin Ranch that's right in proximity to the archery range of Pine Mountain Lake. And we're also still working on some NDRC grants through HUD through Tuolumne County to bolster some of the fuel breaks in the area. Last thing I'd like to remind folks is on Monday, April 1st at 6 p.m. at the Groveland Community Hall, Tuolumne County Fire, the Sheriff's Office and OES will be having a fire safety and evacuation preparedness meeting. So if you haven't heard about that, I can leave a flyer for you, but that would be great to have as much public participation. And that, again, is Monday, April 1st at 6 p.m. at the Groveland Community Hall on Main Street. So, thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you for standing in for Sister Chief. Appreciate it. Did the directors have any comments? The public have any comments? Okay, we'll close the comments, and we will go to item number 2. General Manager report.
As always, the majority of my discussion is on the agenda. We've had some pretty busy agendas lately. Wanted to let you know that we are in the process of submitting a hazard mitigation grant notice of intent. It's not a commitment for any particular grant at this point. It's basically to get into the state's priority listing based on our adopted local hazard mitigation plan. The county has adopted what's called a multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation plan. It includes individual program plans from each of the major communities that have prepared them and submitted them. We've submitted one. And it identifies hazards in terms of fire, flood, hazardous materials, sinkholes, weather-related incidents. And because of the fact that we're seeing a lot of really major fires, FEMA and Cal OES are moving quite a bit of money into the hazard mitigation program. That means that they are putting money into communities that want to be proactive in implementing mitigation that reduces your risk to various things. We've seen flooding in our community that we don't control and nobody else is going to take responsibility for. And we want to take a look at if there's anything that we can do, evaluate that drainage flow through the park, determine if there's improvements that can be done to mitigate future flooding. We have some critical facilities there we don't want to do it over and over and over. If there's a way to channelize or change the flow within that region. The other area that we've got problems, obviously, is fire safety and potentially evacuation. If there were ever an evacuation order, it gets really crazy when people are panicked and smoke and flames and roads are closed and people come up to an area and don't know which way to go. You can't just say, here's your evacuation plan, whenever there's a fire, go this way. because you might be just turning right into the wrong direction. And time is your life. And so this, one of the other proposals that we've talked about is to outfit the community emergency response team. It's typical to pull in a trailer, have a trailer that we house here that supports that emergency response team, flags, signs, banners, vests, hard hats, whistles, lights, everything that they would need to be outfitted to be able to do a major traffic control event or to help, you know, put up signage. Also, some emergency signboards, things that light up, that have an arrow that say this way, detour, and those can be used in any type of emergency. They can be moved around. And so it's basically mobile units that we would be submitting a notice of intent for that would support the community emergency response and also our fire department. The amount at this point is still being worked out. We're going to likely submit for more than we need in the notice of intent, and then by July they'll let us know whether they're going to invite a full application. And between now and that time, we'll work out all the details on exactly which piece of equipment, because we have to do a cost benefit and some other things at that point. So if they accept it, then it'll come back to the board for action on the final submittal of an application. If they reject it, at least we'll figure out what they do and don't fund. So that's the hazard mitigation grant notice. Again, they come out and they give you 30 days in many cases to get these things in. So they expect that you're going to have all of these things in order. Well, not everything is that far planned out here in Groveland. Not pointing fingers at anybody, but so we also are on a daily basis. I'm moving into the state funded projects. Any questions about the notice of intent?
No, it sounds
okay,
good.
I'll finish up all my stuff and then I'll put it out there. The state funded projects, we have basically three projects that we're moving into construction grant and loan applications on. We've got the downtown Groveland water and sewer projects. Those are still planning grant projects that we're finishing up. The planning grant on the water side takes you all the way through plans and specifications, state permits, approvals, and preparation of the construction funding application. And we've submitted all the documentation. We continue to get emails from the state, submit this, submit that, you know, an updated document on our debt financing and an updated audit report, those types of things. So they'll send a message, we'll respond. They'll send a message, we'll respond. It's not like we've got a laundry list of things that we have to do by a certain date. That process is slowing down significantly on all the projects, the sewer, the water. And now the Clear Whittles are back, obviously, into the priority mix. They're getting all the information from us, so those may be moving toward a funding agreement as well, which is really a good sign. It's a over $2 million project. Their recoat, the Clear Whittle project is, we haven't talked a lot about it because it kind of went on the back burner, but it's recoating tanks that we have that are at our treatment plants that are the first place that the water is stored when it comes out of the treatment plant. And we're seeing corrosion and problems within the tank, and it's a real process to take them down and recoat them. So making good headway on those funding applications, and we don't know exactly what the funding agreement timing is until they actually move it out and say, here's your draft agreement. And they don't give you really any indication other than we're in line, they're moving through. But it still looks good for summer or fall, I think, for the both the sewer and the water project.
Okay.
for an agreement.
That, does that include Groveland and Big Oak Flat?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the whole project. In fact, I've asked Alfonso, our district engineer, to come for the April board meeting and to give an update report and go over things and answer your questions specifically about that, because it's been a while. When mm-hmm. these projects go on for 2 years, sometimes we lose focus on what they are, and I really want him to get engaged. As we move towards construction, I want him to be able to say, here's where it's going, here's what it is, here's why it is, because we are going to be having to acquire some easements in places where people are not going to like the fact that we're looking for an easement. We'll have to go through the process of acquiring that easement to be able to construct. We have to get through the preliminary engineering, the design, and then the environmental review, and then we are likely going to have to go through and do an appraisal report for the easements. In other words, you go in and you value what that, if you need a 20-foot swath across somebody's property to install a water line, you have to come up with the value of what that is. So you'll have an appraiser come out, they'll look at it, they'll value it, they'll take pictures, we'll get an appraisal report, here are the 20 easements we need, here's the amount for each one, we'll make an offer, people will reject it, and then we'll have to go into negotiations with them, and at the same time, you typically file an action in court that that keeps the process moving forward, but you come to agreement on the easements.
Does it fall under eminent domain?
It does, but it's mm-hmm. but it usually doesn't go there. You have to
negotiate first.
No matter what, you have to pay. Yeah. You have to pay the market value of whatever that easement right. is. It's just the appraisal report might say it's a $300 easement. Property owners should say, no, about $3,000.
Yeah,
that's just the way it works. You know, some people will donate it and then get the credit, you know, get the tax credit for the donation to the public agency. Others will hold out for the last minute and just
sure.
drag us through the mud. But I just want to let you know, because you'll be able to see where these things are going to occur. We'll have a map that shows you the easements we need to acquire.
And a lot of times, aren't these easements where we go in and dig it up, put the pipe in there, whatever we have to do, and then fill it back in, right? Yeah. And then we just, the easement is basically we have access to that.
Yeah, we need to be able to.
Well, they can't actually can't use it. The right. thing about an easement is you can't build anything. You right. have to use it yourself. So
we do have a process for an encroachment permit. So if somebody wants to, like, set a shed on it, we could allow them to do that under an encroachment permit with the understanding that at a moment's notice.
Permanent structure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll talk more about that as we, I just want you to get a good visual of the project, all three projects, and that'll happen in April. If the agenda gets too weird for April, we may schedule a special meeting for that, but we'll see. And then my verbal update on the compensation study. We've had some initial numbers come in. We had the again, we had the two variables we've landed on. One was the classifications. We agreed on that, what they were evaluating. We also agreed on the comparator agencies that they were looking at. And so now they've gone out, they've gotten some initial data, and we're going through that data and getting to understand it and trying to make sure that it is absolutely relevant and that everything works out. And then the next step is they'll prepare a draft final report. They'll come before the board and present that information. So that I would expect that in April as well.
Okay, does the board have any questions or comments on any of the general manager's report? Okay, public comments? Yeah.
I have a question. So when you voted in January to change the classification of employees, I thought you were going to wait till the study was complete, or did you have to do that to get, I would like clarification, you had to do that for them to move forward, is that
yes. correct?
Okay, so did that affect anybody's pay range then, because I didn't think it was supposed
not
to.
Not at this point.
But it
not
might, yet. But it might when they come through with their study, so somebody that was O&M that was getting a certain, maybe changed their pay it could affect them when you come through with this study, correct?
Right.
That may not be a good thing for them.
Oh, that they should be getting it now?
No, no. I'm just saying it's just that
it
if you...
It could go either way.
What I'm trying to say is if somebody's making $20 an hour, you shouldn't lower it. If you're changing their job description...
No. We have to... We're subject to an MOU, so we have to meet and confer with the union no matter what.
Okay. Yeah.
There's no just arbitrary changes up or down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, if there's a major change in classification for an employee that's in that classification and they've got a completely different job requirement and different pay and everything else, there may be a transition time. So there's a lot to resolve between now and...
So since the topic just came up, I was going to bring it up in director comments, but we have an MOU to negotiate.
Yes, we do.
Are we going, in past, we've had a committee as well as the general manager involved. I don't necessarily care. How is your preference as a
general manager
negotiation?
Yeah.
Just all the way?
General manager, and if you need legal counsel, if you really want to involve legal counsel, then general manager and legal counsel.
Okay, so the only thing...
Because you're not negotiating with me, because I'm, you know, and the board of directors, in reality, you'll give me direction as a board.
I'm just going to say, I think the rationale for having a committee in the past had been... That's a way of the board being able, at least some of the board being able to sort of keep track of what's going on in the negotiations rather than having the final negotiated agreement presented as a take it or leave it kind of thing. That'll be a change from the way we've done it in the past, that's all.
I've never had a good outcome with the board on a negotiating committee with the union, ever. It's never worked out, ever. In my experience, and it's certainly not recommended when you go through the leadership. It's not recommended that when you're negotiating for wages, hours, and working conditions, that's a management function. It doesn't mean you can't. It's just and I'm subject to the will of the board. But when it comes to the direction from the board, we'll do that in closed session. Even if we've got to have a special meeting, closed session,
right?
And we'll get the direction, and I won't have the authority to get us to that point where we've got an impasse situation, or that's the thing. Is instead of it being a committee, it would be the full board, and then I have the flexibility to work within some bookends that we put up.
Yes, John.
I don't know how we ever got on that, where we would have these committees for the negotiations and stuff. But I think, to me, we hired the general manager to do the job, and that's part of the job. We're still going to have to approve it. We're still going to give direction on which, what we feel. So I feel comfortable with that. I think it... To me, I've always kind of questioned some of the board, some of the committees we've had. Sometimes, we used to go a little heavy on committees, and I don't think we need to. And so I think I'm comfortable with it, if everybody else is.
Since it's a report, Madam President, I'd like to just recommend we put this on as an action item for April. We can actually put it on and have a good discussion about it.
I just wanted to bring it up.
No,
I just wanted to know where we were.
I was,
as it happens, I was on the committee for the last one. And I'll just say, the board members didn't really do any negotiating. We were just pretty much there to keep, so that we had at least two board members that were aware of what the progress was of the negotiations as it went along. And then if there was anything that we felt that, that gave us the opportunity to say, hey, we probably need to have a closed session meeting to talk about this. I'm not saying we have to do it that way.
Session committee meetings?
No. The negotiation sessions were negotiation sessions with the business unit. And then if we thought that we needed to have direction from the board, then we would have a closed session scheduled for a regular, or for a special meeting, a regular special meeting, and have a closed session to have the discussion with the whole board.
Okay,
we didn't have any, you know, it was advisory. We didn't have any
right
ability to say yes or no to anything.
Okay, let's.
But we could skip that too. I mean, we just go directly to.
Put it on as it's normal when you go into negotiations for the board to appoint a negotiator. It might be a committee, it might be the general manager, it might be an attorney.
We'll talk about it next month. Thank you very much. Okay, where are we? Operations manager report. I'm sorry.
Did you close the public comment?
Yeah, we didn't hear you. Jess, to comment on that.
We did, didn't we? We did close public comment.
Well, we're just commenting on the end of my report.
Okay.
Which was the CERT program also, right?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
So who's ultimately going to be responsible for the trailer and the supplies and everything? Because somebody's got to be responsible.
It'll be the district.
Okay.
Under its fire department.
Okay, because currently we don't have a CERT program up here in
right
Groveland specifically.
Right. That's under development.
Okay, sorry about that.
One of the most recent meetings, we had a presentation by Chief Murphy. In fact, it was just last month.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they're proceeding with putting that together.
Okay.
Good deal.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Just a comment. By removing all these committees, there's no checks and balances. We had committees for a reason, and they were very successful. And I would like to see a committee just in case something pops up that maybe the general manager doesn't think about. One of the board members might think to add something or remove something for a reason. And I think the committees were a good thing. We've lost all our committees. And personally, I think it's good when you have committees. That's all. Other districts do it. There's a reason they do it. All of a sudden, we've eliminated them all of a sudden. So I do support committees.
A short remark on that. There were committees that no one was attending. There were no reports on a monthly basis at the meetings. There were no reason to continue with the committees that we eliminated.
But excuse me, I do have copies of reports that were given at board meetings by different committees, and I can provide them to you if you
no,
like.
No, that's okay. I understand. But there were also a lot of committees that there was nothing coming
true
out of.
But there were committee reports to the entire board at a board
and
meeting.
We're always open to ad hoc committees when an item comes up and it's necessary. So that's still an option. Okay, any other comments from members of the public? Okay, we'll close those comments, and we are on to the operation manager report.
All right, so February was long for all of our staff. Due to the weather, we had snow, freezing temperatures, downed trees, extended power outages. AWS was still a factor for us as well. They made it through it. They did great, actually. So kudos to the staff again this month for that.
Yes, thank you, Greg.
At this time, too, AWS is, we're back on regular Hetch U tunnel water, so that's a good thing. We actually got it on the 4th, so we got it early.
Good.
So that's good. Another highlight today we actually just received in the mail was Tony Felipe actually received it as operator in training for the wastewater treatment plant today, so that's huge for us. We're moving forward on getting him on the plant. He'll be the next year out there doing his thing. If you want to get his certification for that.
Tony Trivilla.
He likes to be called Tony. So. With this storm event, though, we did have a pretty hetchy, actually had a really big incident with along with PG&E out there by our Big Creek Water Treatment Plant. Tree fell, green tree. Saturated ground, tree fell through the main transmission lines of Hetchy and through PG&E lines. PG&E would not get in there to repair any of their equipment until Hetchy had theirs dealt with. And they had to call in helicopters, restretch wires. They had actually some of the power, one of the main transmission towers damaged one of the arms and all the insulators on it. They dropped three lines onto the ground. So That actually put us back on our turbine pump repair as well, which is scheduled for tomorrow to be pulled. So they had to get in there and get all that stuff back up and operating before we could get in there. And so we were actually on generator power for almost a week, I believe, out there. So,
yeah, friends that live out there, and they were using their generators for a week.
Yep. Crazy. And actually, PG&E paid for our fuel while we were doing this, because they're the ones that made the call to have an extended outage due to the other transmission lines.
Yeah, they didn't want to.
So they brought in generators. They actually brought in fuel trucks to fill our generators. And if they property owners had generators, they actually filled them up for them.
I've always heard that the PG&E will reimburse you for stuff you lose and if you burn your generator.
Sometimes. Because we're on generator in our bus stations and actually here for quite a few days during February. And no, there's nothing involved in that. So it was pretty good to be able to have that happen out there. So, but they got a temporary fix. They said within 2 years we'll have a permanent fix. So with that, what else do I have here? Yeah. It was a green tree that came down too. We're looking at probably 36 to 40 diameter of the tree.
So is that what's missing on this side?
It broke all the insulators and it damaged that one arm there, yeah.
Wow.
It was three main lines coming through there, so it took all of them down. They said if it was in summertime, we would have fire.
Oh yeah.
So luckily it was in the snow and ice and God. All that good stuff. With that, the freezing temperatures it was tested on AWS for a little while as well. We had a lot of stuff freeze out there because we got down in the teens. So we got all that prepared. We're hopefully one day we're going to be able to make that a more permanent structure so we don't have to worry about stuff like this or cold weather or hot weather, and everything is just going to be protected under the away from the elements. I'll just move into the project real quick. The drying pad is kind of, all the concrete work was done. We still got some wall or some drain work to do and then put in a new gate, but that was kind of extended out because of the weather. The flume was the same thing. We had some talks with the contractors, but there's water running in there. So they can't get in there and shape it and take anything out until that water stops. So that's going to be extended out a little bit longer. Reservoir 1, I think we're going to put some more documentation to come in, and we can probably start that project. The valve vault underneath Reservoir 1. The rotary started their sunshade down there over the barbecue pit at the Lower Park.
I saw that.
So they got some posts up, and I'm not really sure where they're going to go, or when their next step is to get down there and finish it, but it's underway, and we actually have a job walk for the firehouse next Monday.
Cool.
Asphalt concrete repair in front of the station. I don't know if you guys drove by and seen it, but it's getting pretty bad.
Yeah.
Some giant holes, and there's a lot of groundwater in that area. So, other than that, just want to kudos to all staff, office, to field staff, and it's good.
Good.
Awesome. Okay.
We got a lot going on.
Director comments?
Is there like a water leak on Ferretti, kind of like by Unit 6, Lot 204?
Nope. It's saturated groundwater coming from
the
bank.
It's literally
just
the water.
And actually, a couple years ago, there was actually a pretty good sinkhole right there. And they kept putting cut back in it, and they finally dug it up and put drain rock and everything in there. And that's why it's just seeping out where they didn't repair before. We've tested it multiple times. Same thing like on Freddy Road, right before the new repair. That corner is starting to pop up. We have groundwater coming out everywhere. So the ground is just saturated in multiple places.
Amazing
how saturated the ground. Yeah. I'll go over the divide. By the scar, you call it, going into the big old flat, that big spot right there, same thing. It's just groundwater. When you get it up, it just pops out and runs in the curb line. And it looks like, I wish you could just trap it all.
Yeah.
Something down the road.
It can be hard to determine. But we do check them out and make sure.
Okay, any public comments?
I want to just, one thing that I want to really say publicly that this is a fantastic report that Louis is putting together.
Yeah.
He saw a different style of report and immediately went in and reconfigured all of his information and put it in tabular format and things that we can track as far as benchmarks in the future. And it's just
really, really helpful, so I want to extend my appreciation to him on that. And also, we have a, I don't know if you remember, we have a small claims court claim.
Yes.
We never heard back, which was interesting, but the party that filed the action did, and the small claims court denied his request for that. So this is not a closed session item at this point. It's just to let you know that was related to damage to a water heater and our response and whether it was timely and all that.
That was the air in the
line. Air in the line, yeah. Mm-hmm. Since discovered that there are ways, those are great systems and they're going to be the wave in the future. And there is a little $15 air relief valve that goes into it.
Yeah.
The recommended to put in is not mandatory, but that's the only way to bleed the air out of it. And that was never installed. And anyway.
Electric or propane? Curious. Okay.
I don't
know. For one or the other.
I don't know what the heating medium was. It was basically just the fact that the system drained, and then when it rebuilt, it airlocked.
Okay.
And they didn't have the ability to.
His system was actually kind of like a heat board, so it was heat as well, so it recirculated through his whole house. So it's a little different than just having a tank full of water. It actually would recirculate through his whole house, and then that's what airlocked the whole house, not just the hot water tank.
It wasn't just the tank.
It actually pumps, and it has the water to pump. It pumps water over there. So that's what I mean.
Very really fun.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought just, great report.
Yes, yeah, I like it. It's
a lot more to it.
It's easy to read.
Yes, there was a little bit of last minute. Having to change it right at the last minute. So there is some formatting issues and some stuff that I'm going to work out next month, but. I'm gonna give Jen a little bit more time to proofread it for me instead of the last minute. So I like the format. I saw something like that. So
something new. Thank you. So we're gonna go on to the administrative service manager's report.
Okay. So kind of to piggyback off of what Louie was talking about earlier about winter months. The winter months are. It tends to be a lot of work for all of the departments here in the field because of the multiple issues that they're having, as well as in the office. Because with winter months, as we know, it's a vacation community, so most of the vacation homes are vacant throughout the winter, and which we experience a lot more water breaks, irrigation breaks, a lot more phone calls from neighbors wanting, you know, to check on their homes. One of the things that I don't know if the board's aware of that the district does is every month we do audits of the meter reads, which is uncommon in anywhere. Nobody else generally does these. But we print out a report every month of the meter reads, and Rachel goes through them line by line. It's based on a level over, I think we've even brought it down to 6,000 gallons per month. But anything out of the norm, we audit, and then we provide a phone call to the customer saying, you know, we just noticed you had higher than normal read as a courtesy to make sure that they, you know, if they have a water break, that they're not damaging their home, having a super high water bill, so on and so forth. And we get a lot more of those in the winter time. In addition to that, in admin, we are currently working on a customer service packet, and we kind of sat down and brainstormed when new customers come into the district, you know, how do we introduce them to GCSD, because this CSD is really unique. A lot of people that come here move to cities, and they don't understand, you know, the multiple services that GCSD provides and why we exist here, because we are removed from any municipal utility that would be able to provide these services. So we provide multiple services that you would generally have multiple entities providing elsewhere. With that, it's kind of describing the district, what we do, what we provide, where our water comes from, how to pay your bill, a bill explanation with a printout with arrows explaining, you know, working people through the bill, explaining what the charges are, the debt service charges, holidays, ordinances, all of the pertinent information that people would want to know coming in as a new customer of GCSC. So that's been something that we've been working on for the last month. And then the only other thing is our file management process that Renee has been working on continues to go on, and it will continue to go on for quite some time. But she is doing an excellent job. The way that she has been able to organize, go through, see the documents that we have duplicates for, ones we don't need, ones that aren't relevant, and she's making really good headway on that. And so I'm really hopeful that we're, you know, in the next probably year or two, we'll actually have a nice kind of records index, inventory, electronic copies of everything, because it's one of the issues we have is there's things that we, before computers really came into play, that we don't even know that exist until we start digging in really old cabinets. So making some significant progress on that. She's doing an excellent job.
Great. Any director comments? Director comments?
I have one.
Yes.
This includes scanning some old documents in, digitizing them. Is this the project?
We haven't gotten to that part yet, but this is the process to get to that. So we go through all of the documents and figure, okay, organize everything, index everything, and then the electronic, which we still have to determine how we're going to do that. By what means are we going to scan these into so they're easily and readily available.
And this is, these are growing pains a lot of organizations have gone through and have gone through in the past. It's good that you're on that. It's a good project.
A lot of work.
Very big.
It is.
Yeah. Okay, we'll open that up to the public.
So three things. I think it's great that you're doing that. So the other question that I would think of, from a records retention perspective, do you have a record retention policy or program that says, okay, these legally we keep for 5 years, 10 years, after 10 years, toss them or whatever you choose to do, but at least you've got a formalized process. And then I like your idea of the introduction to GCSD. So are we reaching out to the realtors so that they can make that a part of that package? So when a new homeowner comes on board, they get a packet about PML, but they'll get one about GCSD. Here's a flyer, here's a website.
We're still working out all of the details because it's kind of a twofold where we have like the paper stuff we want people to have that they're going to read and it's going to be the highlights. But I also, what I envision is kind of giving people a USB as well. So all of the bigger documents, like our ordinances and the stuff that we don't want to print out,
right.
To give that to them electronically. But yes, have this as where the realtors inform the new potential or new homeowners. This is where you get this information at, and then really making it, because most of the time when people come in, they don't know. They just say, oh, this is where I was told to get my water, you know? So we're trying to make that process for the new homeowner smoother, and because many are not used to the fact of what GCSD provides. They're not used to the fire and the this, and so it takes a little bit to inform them of that and why that exists and how we're governed. A lot of people have questions.
Right, and have a standard Q&A so they can figure out their own
exactly.
Stuff. So on the water loss, a few years back we had talked about that at some point of putting some pressure release valves on some of the main lines. So instead of waiting 30 days, say, okay, your consumption was over 6,000 gallons, it'll trigger somebody to say, we've got a problem on this line that feeds these homes. Let's go figure out what the issue is. And at one point, we also further discussed if we could find a manufacturer that could get them, if people want to install them on their home, like an automatic shutoff, like an earthquake valve for gas, if it detects a broken line, automatically shuts it off, then if we could get a manufacturer to give us a discounted rate, we can work with the local plumbers to get them installed in people's homes. That'll save us a lot of water. And let people know, such as myself, that were vacation owners at one point, I don't have to worry about it. If I get there, the water's shut off. Something triggered that. Now I got to go find out where the break was instead of losing the water and the money.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big... Pete right now has
I'll go pursue it for you guys.
It's funny that you mentioned that.
Yeah, on the distribution system side, we rely on engineering recommendations as far as the installation of pressure regulating systems, because if we regulate one area, we might wind up with zero pressure in a whole area just to control it for a few. So that's why the individual home pressure regulators are important. Our system is intended to take the higher pressure with the pipelines. So it's the residential plumbing that needs to be protected by a functioning pressure regulator, which is what we find. We find that they've been around since the home was constructed in the 70s, and it's stuck open, and so it never regulates the pressure. It's, if the stick's closed, we usually hear about it. There are not really good options for turning water off automatically. They're there, and they're connected to your home network, but the decision making is not very good. It doesn't know really the difference between a toilet makeup and a pipe leaking in a wall. So it doesn't take the homeowner out of the responsibility, but I'm demoing a really cool product that I'd really like to throw out to the board just for information purposes. 2 minutes, straps onto your meter, connects to your home network, tells me when I've left a leaky garden hose on. It gives me a text message and texts me every 2 hours to tell me that I forgot to shut the hose off. Tells me if the shower's gone for too long. It's a little bit invasive.
Wow.
I know when anything's going on that's using water, but man, I'll tell you what, it'll tell you when you've got a leak. Kept getting texts last night for some reason. I couldn't figure it out this morning. The bathroom faucet, I left it on a little bit when I brushed my teeth, you know. So there, it's...
That'd never work at my house. I have a 13-year-old daughter. It takes 3 or 4 showers a day.
You'll know how long she takes a shower.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
This came up before, and we actually, as I recall, made an attempt to go look for some kind of product that would do the automatic shutoff, and it turns out that doesn't exist. I mean, or at least we couldn't find it. What they have is things where you have like a water sensor, it'll detect if you have an internal leak, and it'll send an alarm or something like that. But this is pretty cool. So this goes right on the meter, and do you need to have an auto-read meter for that?
No.
No.
It's got 2-year batteries in it, and it's $200. It's really...
So you actually install it in the line?
No. You set it over the top of the meter. It's got a rubber strap.
So it senses the water.
It senses the magnet in the meter spinning, and it is accurate.
That's cool.
To the...
It ain't going to turn it off, but it'll warn you.
And
it
communicates with a bridge that connects to your Wi-Fi. So you got to have that bridge within 1,000 feet of your meter. Which most properties you're going to be fine without.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty
and
cool.
Then
that wouldn't work on a well.
It'll, no. But you could put a meter in.
Thank you.
You could put a meter in, and then it would transmit that to you.
Yeah.
You download the app.
Put a meter in, and then the government wants to come see how much water you're using or whatever.
What's it called?
Flume.
Flume.
Flume. Flume Tech. FLUMETEC.
Will it work with an electric meter?
It works just if water's gone.
It's only water.
You can't put it over your left.
If you're a PG&E customer, you can log in and look at it real time. It's a day late, though. it only tells you what you used yesterday. It's not real time.
Smart meters.
No. But we had discussed this. This is a really good option because so many of our customers are part-time owners because there's a thing where you say, my water's off. So it'll alert you at all if any water's coming on.
Well, they're at it. They've got the plumber out there. They can put...
but if you just hit one button on your app on your phone as you're driving back to San Jose that says I'm away, and it'll give you a text and continuously text you if there's any water usage at all. That would involve them calling us, but it saves us having to go through a leak adjustment, which is huge, It might cost them a little bit to do the service call to turn things off, but in all reality, it's much better than...
Close to 100,000 gallons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's proactive as opposed to reactive.
That water's coming into the sewer, too.
Well, and it's water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't have any more.
Yeah, I guess.
No, we're still in operation.
No, we're...
Administrative service manager. My report's done.
Your report's done?
Administrative.
Okay, so...
What about
questions? I have a question.
Yes.
Public comment.
Yes.
Can you still, if you have a break in your line, write a letter and get a reduction for your bill?
We did. We revised. So the policy was...
I remember we thought we revised it. You couldn't do that anymore.
No, when the drought happened, it went down significantly. A couple of meetings ago, I brought it back to the board because I would like it to go back to the way it was prior to the drought restrictions, where internal plumbing, because with the revised one, no internal plumbing counted at all. It had to be between the meter and the house underground, undetectable. And, you know, reality is things happen, and people's plumbing systems and water heaters go out and so on and so forth. So we were having to say no to a lot of people, which caused a lot of hardship. So we just recently revised the policy. Internal plumbing does count, not irrigation. Irrigation leaks do not count for that, because a lot of our leaks are people who leave and leave their irrigation timers on or don't winterize their system. But internal plumbing does count. It's one time every 24 months that they can apply for an adjustment to be billed at the lowest tier instead of, so all gallons at the lowest tier is what the adjustment will be.
That's what I recall, and I had a neighbor that had a timer on a hose with a sprinkler on it, and that timer broke, and his water, he has a $400 bill.
Was this just recently?
Yes.
Yeah,
and so he said he was told that he could write a letter.
So we,
exception or something.
I dealt with this yesterday, yeah, and I said that I would make an exception, but to let them know that going forward, that he had to acknowledge that irrigation would no longer count, and so that wouldn't happen again, but I did make an exception for that.
Thank you, I felt bad that I didn't notice the sprinkler running. It's right in the front, and I really felt bad when you told me, see my water running?
Yes, Kay.
Are we still in administrative?
Yes.
Okay. When do I get to ask a question about the finances?
That's under the consent calendar.
We haven't got there yet.
We're not there yet.
We're still under staff reports.
Okay,
any other public comments?
I just want to come back to, I should have asked the acknowledge. To your UFDs that are going to go to new homeowners, I'm actually working with someone who's involved with the chamber that wants to put together a whole welcome package about everything that's going to go on. So if you have a timeline where when you think it's going to be close to being done, should we know? Because I'd like to be part of that welcome package.
Awesome. Yes, Lou.
I've got to read this. Since we're on the subject of turning people's water off and freezing and wasting water and all that, this individual property owner called. I'm just going to read you what he wrote. This is all on social media. I'm not really sure what social media page it was. I left my home in Pine Mountain Lake ahead of the recent storm. This morning I learned that not only did the storm bring freezing temperatures, but it also brought a widespread power outage. I leave my thermostat at 45 degrees and leave my water service on. I learned that GCSD is closed today for the storm. I called the emergency number requesting an emergency water service shutoff. Within a half an hour, my water was shut off, and I received a confirming phone call from the service man. Thank you. So,
I thought that was cool. He reached out to me directly as well, knowing my position, and I said, well, post it, share it. That's great. That's good stuff. And so,
I forgot that in my
report. We're doing good stuff.
So now we'll try.
Thank you. We're going to close public comment, and we will now go to the park committee report, advisory report. Pete, please.
Very short and sweet, so we can move on with the agenda. We are really cruising along and getting a lot of interest from stakeholders in being part of the planning process for potential park improvements. And included in your packet is a fantastic flyer that Ronnie put together about our upcoming stakeholder meeting. Again, we're not looking for this meeting to be a packed room talking about projects. However, we're not going to say, no, you can't talk about something you're interested in. But we really want to get people in a room, get some excitement going, and have those people each go out and find 20 people who really want to be engaged and be part of the planning process. And we have a subsequent meeting scheduled on a Saturday in April, where we've now reserved the gym at the high school. Right?
Yes, high school.
School. And basically, these are listening sessions. We'll get some initial input from this meeting on the 21st. Of the stakeholders will likely get some really good interactive time with the public on the Saturday meeting, and hopefully we can get a bunch of people there to talk about everything from campgrounds to trails to fields to picnic tables to infrastructure in the park to future of the skate park, future of the ball field, whatever it is, all of those things we want to hear about, because there are a number of grant grant opportunities coming available. Some of them are directly for maintenance and rehabilitation of our existing facilities. That would be a small chunk of money that hasn't come out yet, but then there's larger pots of money that are available on a competitive basis for bigger projects, more visionary projects, more community-driven stuff, okay? With every project, I understand I'm not trying to promote us building this big, huge, expensive facility, or group of facilities, whatever it is. In all reality, it's an opportunity for us to educate and inform the public on what our funding sources are for Part 2 and what the limitations are. And maybe we can do some things to generate revenue as part of the park projects, or to at least get where we're not increasing costs because we don't have any way to do that. Anyway, great stuff. Ronnie's doing a fantastic job, has a huge list of people that she's engaged with to get involved in this. You know, again, from the stakeholder perspective, there's my cookies.
Is this meeting, I mean, from a political perspective, is this a committee meeting? Is this a nothing?
We will put out an agenda for the committee. So it will be a committee meeting.
So this is a park committee. From a technical point of view, this is
even though it's an advisory committee, and when we go to the school, it's advisory, it's off-site, it's unconventional. But we'll put out an agenda so that people know where it is and what, and that it's going to be members of the board that are appointed to this. And you all.
I assume it's a park committee meeting. These are park committee meetings. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yep, Brown Act compliant.
This one will be here at the district office.
So that, and just as an aside, that puts us, those of us who are not on the park committee, we can attend the meeting, but we can't actually say anything.
Correct. Absolutely.
We have to keep our mouth. When we do Saturday, we'll see how we can structure.
That's going to be a workshop,
non-board meeting, not talking about board business, just receiving input, not...
Okay, I'm kind of interested in going.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't want to keep the board from being part of it just because it's a committee.
No, we want to stay inside the rule book.
Yes,
inside
the
rule book.
We'll find out how to do that.
Yes, yes. Any other director comments? Any public comments? Yes.
So your largest chunk of grant funding is for brand new parks, correct? As opposed to rehabbing. So shouldn't the first order of business be to kind of decide whether or not there's going to be land available for us to put a park on it? I mean, aren't we putting the cart before the horse? I mean, we've been told in the past that we can't put it over there, we can't rehab or do anything with Leon Rose any longer because that's a spray field. And then there was discussion about another piece of property. If there's no if there's no land available, then you're spinning your wheels. You can't put a park anywhere.
I'll just tell you, there's no bookends on this right now. There's no can't do. We're not putting any limitations on this because that's not the way this evolves. If it becomes a community, here's what we want and here's how we're going to get there from the community for a particular course of action, a new facility, a new type of recreation feature, abandoning one thing, doing another, then that's how we'll try to plan, you know. The grant funding is all across the board. The competitive stuff, the money with the higher limits of grant are community-driven and, for the most part, have to have some new component. It's not that it's just a new component and you can't do anything with your existing. In other words, if you got to expand or redo a parking lot or redo a bathroom to be able to support this new activity or add another bathroom, those can all be part of it, you know. So it's not super cut and dry. You have to go to parks.ca.gov and look at there's three or four different grant programs that are in there from Prop 68.
Yes.
The district does have a land use survey booklet that was done in 2007 or 2008, and it shows the land behind the current park, Mary Lavorne Park, where you could expand. So maybe you should have that available when you're doing this workshop, so you can see the map of where you can expand to the current park and build it. If you don't,
I think we had all those
250 acres up there.
We had all of that report.
We had all those reports available at that first park committee meeting we had earlier.
I'll make the next one.
Yes.
If you need a copy, I have.
Thank you. I think we have. We had that.
We have it electronically and.
Yes. Any other public comments? Okay, let's go on to the consent calendar. Consent calendar items are considered routine and will be acted upon by one motion. There will be no separate discussion on these items unless a member of the board, staff, or the public requests specific items to be discussed. So, approve the minutes February 12th, approve minutes February 28th, accept February payables, waive reading of ordinances and resolutions except by title, approve the attendance of two directors to the Special District Risk Management Authority Spring Education Day, March 26th in Sacramento.
I move that we approve the consent calendar.
I'd like to pull an item.
Okay. Any directors have any questions regarding any of these items? Okay, we have a motion on the... Can I get a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. We will, after we got our second. Thank you. Okay, now it's open to the public for comments.
I have a question on the financials here. So in February, you're still paying the temporary office clerk, which when you hired the temporary office clerk, you said it was because you were losing an employee. I see the employee's back, so why are we still paying a temporary office clerk?
We answered that at the last meeting you asked this question. We are retaining them until we fill the newly approved administrative services tech position.
So when that position gets filled, then this position goes away, correct? Okay, just because, you know, you asked that. And also there's something here that says Pine Mountain ad, Louis Spotlight. What is that for $288?
That is
an ad?
It's the article... Louis that was published in the Pine Mountain Lake newspaper. The district is, we did one on Greg, they're doing a spotlight every month.
You're just doing it there and you're not doing it in the Highway Herald?
I don't believe so.
Oh, okay. It would be nice if you would put it in the Highway Herald. A lot of people that live in Groveland that are not in Pine Mountain Lake and Big Oak Flat, they're in the district and they don't get to see that article. It would be nice to just submit it to the Highway Herald as well.
I can speak to that. It's been difficult to reach the person responsible for that at the Highway Herald. I've made several attempts. We're hoping in April those will be in the Highway Herald as well.
Thank you, Ronnie. Any other questions, comments? Okay, we are going to, you've got a motion. Let's ask for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Unanimous. Okay, on to old business. Public hearing regarding adoption of the revised district informal bidding ordinance. Adoption of a resolution approving the district informal bidding ordinance 1-19.
Okay, so, Director, this is a, you have to formally open the public hearing. I don't know if there's anybody actually here that wants to comment that came specifically just for the bidding ordinance, but we need to open the public hearing, take comments, and then we will consider the ordinance itself. But just the overview before we do that. This, as the submittal states, this is, we're updating this. This was brought to the board in December noting that it was just outdated, bid limits were not correct, and we needed to go through this process. The board conducted the first readings at that meeting and then had directed staff to put this for consideration at a future date. Within that, there's rules or laws about when the district wants to approve or amend an ordinance that we had to follow. So we published the proposed summary, which was also brought to the board at the last meeting. That was published in the Union Democrat at least 5 days prior to the meeting, stating what the summary changes were, where they could review an entire copy of the ordinance, and then the date that the public hearings would be today if they wanted to comment on that. So that's where we are today. If there is public comments and then the board adopts this, the district will have to publish a notice of adoption 15 days after the board approves it, and then it becomes effective 30 days from the date that the board approves it. Sorry, I used a lot, but that's the way the law reads.
That's so that everybody gets a chance to make make a comment on it if necessary.
Exactly. I don't know why, once it's adopted, why there's this 15 day that you have to wait to then let people know that it was adopted.
Right.
But
it's a local, an ordinance is your local lawmaking versus just policymaking where you can change meeting to meeting to meeting. Ordinances are much more strict.
Any public comment on this?
Open the hearing.
My big pardon?
Open the hearing. Open the hearing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let's open the hearing. Public comment, please.
I have a question.
Yes.
Nothing got changed since the last time you all discussed this, right? It's all the same thing.
Correct.
Thank you.
It has to be. Yes.
I want to make sure. Just making sure.
Fair question.
Any other comments? Questions? Okay, we're closing the hearing. And now we can, we need motions for this?
Add the recommended action.
Okay, adopt. I would like to adopt the resolution 19-9 approving the district informal bidding ordinance 1-19.
I'll second.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Okay, on to discussion and action items. The Board of Directors intends to consider each of the following items and may take action at this meeting. Public comment is allowed on each individual agenda item listed below, and such comments will be considered in advance of each board action. Item number A, presentation of recognition in Special District Governor's Award to Director Robert Swan. Congratulations, Robert Swan. Yay!
We don't actually have a physical certificate to present quite yet.
I think we all read about it in the CSDA news.
Yeah.
Get the email and it comes out, and I hadn't heard it directly
from you, but
I'm reading about this guy, Robert Swan, and I'm thinking, wow, that's, I didn't want to forget for a second time. Spence brought his in. So anyway, very, very much appreciated. We've got a very engaged board of directors, and this is the leadership, Special District Leadership Foundation was formed just to raise awareness of special districts, to raise the competency of elected officials and management in the requirements and roles and responsibilities. And in order to achieve this, you've got to attend the Leadership Academy and take additional training. It's not something that the district pays you to go and take this additional training. We do cover the expense of travel to get there and the entrance fees, but it's a fantastic accomplishment. It's much appreciated.
Congratulations.
I know.
We're going to nail John down.
I know. I need to go.
Okay.
Well, no, because you guys are going to, after you do the Ben's track,
they'll be getting it this next month. They just
don't want to say anything about it. I think they both already qualified for it.
I submitted their applications this morning.
Woohoo! Okay, any public comments on this?
You should have a party when you're all certified.
When we're all certified?
Celebration.
We do qualify when 4 out of 5 for a higher level of recognition, and then there's even this gold level when management right. And
how fun would that be?
We'll get to that point. I went through it back in the beginning.
I'll do it.
There it is.
Any bottle of Canadian mist involved here? Oh, just never mind.
Bring your own.
Okay, discussion item B. Discuss the process and schedule for committee review of the fire department revenue and expenses, future funding needs, and options. Pete.
I had to make some assumptions about what we wanted to accomplish after the last meeting. It was pretty intense what we went through with the fire department presentation, mm-hmm. focusing on the financials and having all the county officials here and receiving all the public input and all of the excitement associated with this. So understand that I'm not saying that a bunch that we're bleeding and that a tax is the only way to skin this thing. Okay, that's the way the media likes to present the information. It's not the way that it was said. I don't know that I ever used the word bleeding, but it is, revenue and expenses do not balance, and that is my responsibility and obligation to let you know that that is the way it is. So I'm backing up from, in the world of funding measures, if we did go with a funding measure, you've got a number of options that we would look at in the future. About the different ways for it to be structured. But in all reality, if it does go on a ballot, the 2020 ballot is expected to be packed with things, which is going to draw a lot of people in to vote. It'll be a high voter turnout, which gives you a good turnout of your public for either favor or opposition to any type of funding measure. Because in some elections, only the people that oppose or support.
Right.
And then when you get a low turnout, it just kind of, it really lowers your chances of anything. So I've laid out a timeline. Again, as we'll talk about in the next agenda item, we've got a million things going on. But this is a layout, and I'm looking for board input on it. If we were to get to a funding measure for either the June or November ballot in 2020, we need to keep this process moving forward because we're going to have some consulting assistance with it as well.
Yes, please.
On the consulting assistance, now we did in 2007, didn't we do a master plan for
yes.
the fire department? Would it be possible to have that same company add on to what they've done there, just make necessary changes to the existing master plan, or so we can see where we're at, or is it going to be, is it too much of a different subject because now we're under Cal, we're not under, but we've contracted with Cal Fire to do our fire protection and those kind of things?
I think that you don't get a lot of bites at the apple when it comes to funding measures. In other words, we would feel a lot of success if we needed a funding measure, we proposed one, and the voters supported it. To come back 3 years later and say, whoops, we forgot that we've got to upgrade this and replace that, and let's try it again and add to it, your chances go down significantly, unless there's some real big reason. So you try to understand the issue the best that you can going into the measure. And that's why updating that master plan in this process would take a look at the condition of the existing facilities, equipment, staffing, future of Cal Fire, number of responses,
how much it's costing us, where we should be getting reimbursements, where we should be getting funding agreements with others that benefit from our services. All of that can be done in this master plan update, and we're working that forward on a parallel track, not absolutely related to this, but it'll support this. Okay? I know that's confusing, but you can count on a master plan, a proposal from management that we need to update that master plan and include some additional evaluations.
I just am concerned that if this boils down to having to go out for either an assessment or a tax, that we are able to justify it to the existing community. I'm certain the community would like that. If we're going to go out for a tax, the people need to know what it's going to pay for and how much it's going to be this year, next year, and in 10 years. I think taxes have been around a lot longer than assessments. Assessments have a closure time.
Okay. John?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, but we had some problems with the company that did the study last time, didn't we, Jennifer?
He's talking about the city gave the assessment survey.
Because I was going to say, I wouldn't suggest using that same company again.
Well, I would say that we're going to be seeking proposals.
Yeah.
Certainly from firms to do that work. So there's two consultants here. One is the specific fire master plan. Here are your future funding needs today, tomorrow, into the future.
Right.
Okay? Facilities, equipment, operations, everything. On the other hand, then you've got, okay, considering this, here are your options to fund this gap. We recommend seeking a subsidy from the county for this amount, because here's the amount that they benefit. Here's, you know, if Hetch Hetchy's involved, or the National Park Service, or any of those outside players come into play. And then there would be a portion that is either in some form of an assessment or a special tax proposal. There are consultants that specifically understand what our best chances are for success, what the best is for the service needs now and into the future, what's the best way to appropriate that or apportion the cost out by property. And that is the assessment report is what you're talking about, that we did every year for 10 years while it was in place. Whether it's an assessment or a special tax.
Right.
Whether there's a community facilities district, all of those things this other consultant will describe for the board and work with the committee.
I'm concerned that this information gets out to the public.
Yeah.
Every business owner, homeowner, everybody that's got a parcel number inside of Groveland Community Services District and up and down this corridor, it's important that they know this information. So
it's
so they can tell us which way to go.
Something's going to give. Something's going to change. We're either going to not have the money to pay the Cal Fire bill when it comes in at some point into the future, and or we're going to have to get some kind of contribution from somewhere else that doesn't exist today. That is not just GCSD. It's
right.
You've got every fire department in the county that's upside down. Every station of the 20 County Fire Department is.
Because there's no county fire department in the 120 corridor. Not from top of the grade.
A lot of growing pains going on in this county right now for fire department.
So I've recommended a schedule of putting together a committee. When you talk about everybody in Groveland, again, I would suggest that we use the same stakeholder process. We go out, we get those key people involved, have them involve 20 key people. Then we've got a really good listening group, because otherwise people don't get off the pot and get here.
Right.
You know, and then they make a decision 5 minutes before they vote. So that's the first step, is the and then providing information, making sure that the information is understandable to the committee, and start to craft that public message.
and make sure that that's really clear, update the master plan, get to the point where if we land on, okay, we are going to do some kind of funding measure, we go out, we get the consultant for the tax or assessment, then they meet with the board, they meet with the committee, we get that dialed in, it goes back to the board for action, and we need to take some action. I would suggest a minimum of 6 months in advance of the election. That way you get 3 months of time before the deadline, because the last time we did it at, on the deadline date, basically 3 months before the election. And typically on election cycles, what you get is the first thing that comes out is all the negative. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have time to deal with the negative and understand what that concern is and make some adjustments, and then you lose. And you have to have that time. Once it's a measure, the board can't get involved other than to hand out a flyer. Here's factual information about this measure. You can't lobby anything else. Mm-hmm. Prior to the measure being a measure, you can have, you know, hey, mm-hmm. you can have lobbying type conversations. But it's going to be a big process. But if it comes to a measure, it's not going to lose. I'll put everything I have on it, because otherwise there will be changes in the department. There's no changes that can be made, you know. I had an hour and a half phone call last night from somebody in Ebbets Pass who read the article in the Union Democrat as Cal Fire is the cheapest option and Cal Fire saved the GCSD a bunch of money in the long term. And so her question to me was really pointed and really straight up. Does Cal Fire save you money? And, you know, at the time it saved us money, but we should have all known going into it, and from what I hear most people did, that was going to increase. And we're kind of at a break-even point. I feel where the Cal Fire agreement and what we had is very similar, or what we have is very similar to what we had in terms of cost, the staffing. We're not going backwards, obviously, but it's going to increase in cost in the future, and our revenue's not going to keep up. Anyway, it was the measure in Ebbets Pass is proposed at $207 a parcel.
How much is in here?
$200 and some odd. I don't remember exactly what it was.
Do you know exactly what the Ebbets Pass is going for? Are they going for ALS?
Yeah.
See,
they are. You're exactly right. Yep.
Advanced life support, and that's, you know, I've been talking a lot about all that and everything, and there's a lot of things that we can do. And, you know, we might not be able to take over the ambulance right off the bat and stuff like that. It's something we really need to look at. But we could put paramedics on the engine.
Yeah.
And that's mm-hmm. I think, would be the first step, most important step to do, is to get the ALS on the engines, because then that way, when our ambulance is out, if you're having a heart attack, they're going to be able to do just about everything they can do in an ER, they'll be able to do on the scene if they're ALS. So if they're BLS, they won't be able to do it. Certain things like strokes, closed head injuries, stuff like that, we're still kind of messed up there. We need extra ambulances eventually too. But a start would be to go with paramedics. So I was just wondering, I'm sure that they're including all that in there.
That's a good point. So when we get to the point where we're updating the master plan, we need to make sure that is part of the scope that we articulate to the consultant of looking at that, and what level of that is a benefit to the county. And according, you know, I had a conversation with a consultant yesterday, and the guy was, he's the one who did our 2007 study, he's still around. He's a retired fire chief, retired annuitant that does this planning work. And he opened my eyes to some things that I didn't know about
the responsibilities of counties and ALS and BLS and, you know, emergency medical response and the county's responsibilities. And so there'll be, this will be an opportunity for that consultant to say, if you go here, here's the cost, here's how you structure it, and here's the benefit to GCSD, benefit to the county, benefit to, you know, all of these. So it creates a really solid nexus when we do that study. Again, that'll be an agenda item in the future, but it creates a nexus between the level of benefit, the service, the cost, and any agreement we might have with the county or a developer or anything else. Really good stuff.
Okay, I move to appoint an advisory committee of the board consisting of 2 members and approve the preliminary process and schedule as presented or amended.
Second.
Okay, let's take a vote.
Wait.
I'm sorry. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. The public comment, please.
I would just like to say that I tried to bring this up at the last meeting, but the gentleman behind me started talking. I didn't know the rules. But it would be really good when you have your committee meeting or whatever to put down the different scenarios. In other words, are you looking just to increase staff, to paramedics, or are you looking to replace an engine? Scenario A, B, C, and D. So that would be something that you should look into providing to the public. That committee should provide 3 or 4 alternatives, because when I spoke with Chief White on the telephone, he said to me, it's like a buffet, Kay. He says, if you can afford the steak and the eggs, but you can't afford the potatoes, just get the steak and the eggs from Cal Fire. So that would be important to lay out all the different scenarios of what, don't look at me, that's what he said. I didn't make that up, Bob. He made that up. Chief White did. But that was the scenario he gave me. You can pick out the items that you can afford and then worry about the other. Because he also said volunteers. They could bring volunteers. Cal Fire has got them in Tuolumne County. He says, I don't see why. It used to be a workers' comp issue. Yeah. Now it's not. So he says, you can have volunteers here,
yes,
which would help us out. So
yes,
I would like that committee to encompass all of that. That's
okay.
All.
Thank you. Any other public? Yes.
So part of the proposal is, that are you going to specifically have the consultant set up a reserve fund? Because the 2007 plan, and you read the 2001 water plan, all of those plans stipulate that there needs to be reserve funds set up for all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I don't think it's happened. So that would be important. Do you expect the fire? What's that?
I said, funny you mentioned that.
Yes. Well, I mean,
No, that's zero, zero, zero.
I know that was a big takeaway for me, because I read the 2007 fire plan just as I read the 2001 water plan. Right? That's a big takeaway. You need to set up reserve funding, and none of it gets set up.
My recommendation is absolutely 100% yes.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. It's not going to be pretty,
no,
because you're talking about, you know, when we replace some of these engines, you're approaching $1 million. You're not buying engine equipment. You can't count on that.
Yeah,
when you go to a funding
grant,
measure, whoops, we didn't get a grant, let's get another vote. We count, let's put it this way, any tax, any assessment, if we get a grant, we can go down in the levy.
Right.
And I would implore the public to be at the meeting and say, you got a grant where you said $1 million, it was $30 a year for that piece of equipment, you got a grant for it, can you not levy it this year? Challenge your board for that, you know what I mean? But a restricted reserve where every year in September you close the fiscal year from the year before and you move money into it. If you buy a piece of equipment, you move money out of it. You know, and absolutely 100%. But this action that the board's taking today doesn't give that scope.
Right.
Well, that'll be another agenda.
Having a committee then.
Well, the committee will, like you talked about with all the different pieces and options. The committee will give some input on that, and then we'll get it to the board, and then the board will set up the scope of work or approve the scope of work for the consultant.
Okay, any other public comments? Okay, back to the board for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous.
I was stepped out of the room.
I'm sorry, yes.
The motion was made, or it should be specifically appoint the members?
No. Yes, advisory committee. It was as recommended, staff
no,
recommended
you
action.
You didn't name
members. Oh, I'm sorry.
Members.
Oh, yes.
It,
Oh, yes. Who would like to be on this committee? Who? Yes. And
I'll do it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Director Swan and Director Armstrong will be the committee members.
Who moved and who seconded?
Moved. I moved. John seconded.
Thank you.
Okay, item C. Review of board prioritization and direction on the board goals, management objectives, and related actions covering all district services and activities.
Connected. That's just a way to get us through this. This is not a detailed presentation. You've got a lot of detail in your packet. This I call this a brain purge. And the reason that I went into such detail is I want to make sure that the board has an understanding of the steps that it takes to accomplish some of these things. And in the management world, the district management world, when I used to teach the Governance Academy and Leadership Academy through CSDA, we had a graphic that showed the helicopter with the board in it, you know, waving, doing their policy work from 30,000 feet, setting them down onto the ground and letting them, bringing them out into these issues and giving them the little nuts and bolts and the things that are necessary to make sure there's a good understanding of where we're going, and then packaging them back up, putting them in the helicopter, and they stay up here and do the policy thing. That's the visual of this. So I like to go through goals and objectives with the board. We've done a pretty regular update of the management objectives, but we're growing this list in leaps and bounds. And I just want to let you know, because it's an effect not only on me, it's an effect on the board's agenda, and it's an effect on staff, and it's consultants, and then it's legal, and all those types of things that come from these types of activities. So I make sure these things don't happen in a vacuum. And again, people will ask us why we exist. This mission is really pretty cut and dry, that we're here to provide environmentally sound, economic, and compliant services that meet our customers' needs for water, wastewater treatment, fire protection, and park facilities in Groveland. So everything we do supports that. What I'd like to talk about in this discussion is, because you have that long list of written stuff, and if you have any questions about what any of that means, you can ask it now, you can ask it later. It's purely just a brain purge at this point. But the purpose of this discussion is I want to go through the goals that we've established. There are a couple of the objectives that were stated board goals but really never had any language associated with it. I want to check in and make sure that is the goal of the board, because I set the board's goal here, and I'll do 1,000 different things to accomplish that board goal. And I call it a board goal and then a management objective. So basically, it's the goal is up here, and it's kind of fluffy, and you can't really put your hands on it. Make people happy. Okay, well, how's the manager, what objectives can the manager be measured against that people are getting happy? That sounds kind of crazy. But anyway. So reaffirm the existing and proposed board goals. Make sure we have an understanding of the management objectives that we've reviewed before, and we can talk about anything that's been added. And then provide any clarity on tasks. I went down to the task level on this. I don't expect for the board to say, well, I don't think you should be doing this, I think you should be doing that. You could. It's just, the purpose of this is to make sure we have an understanding. So the first goal that we had, and this has not changed from our first conversations a year ago about this,
provide a work environment that values, supports, and improves employee recruitment, development, retention. I'm sorry, I added an extra employee in there. Improves employee recruitment, development, retention, and cross-training of Exxon employees. Do we, not thinking about the wording of it, the intent, the meaning, is that, does that meet the board's intent of what you want me to be working toward?
Yes, I think so. I don't think we changed it from a year ago.
No, it's kind of fundamental to having a
right.
working operation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I just throw that out there because, you know, sometimes it's, you get somebody say, well, an excellent employee, what does that mean? And excellent employees, well, we talk about excellent employees all the time. Board policies, proposed new and amended policies, and updated ordinances that support the accomplishment of management objectives and provide the framework for efficient operations. We've been doing a little bit of that at each meeting. I wish we could do more, but we're going to have to continuously meter it because it's, if I threw a full policy upgrade at you, policy manual upgrade, in all reality, we'd probably get an affirmative vote. We get a lot of input, but there's no way to suck up 300 pages of it at once. And there's no way for us to get through that. So we're picking off what is current, what's important, and...
we did a few of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. we're doing them.
Yeah, it's been a dozen or so. We just, we got to, if we identify any policies that are in conflict with each other or anything else, we need to make sure we take action on those. Because they are complex. Because policies are basically my rules, my guidelines on how I conduct the operations. Support facilities and operations. This is really extensive in the report that I gave you, many, many pages of things that we intend to do. And because I've heard from the public, I've heard from the board, I've heard from other entities, questions about, well, are you doing anything on this? Are you doing anything on that? Are you going to add employees? Last year's grand jury report, perfect example of where grand jury came in and said, you don't have enough employees. Well, for what? What are we, and so we're constantly looking at the operation and determining what structure works best to make sure that there's accountability and efficiency, because you can throw people at stuff all day long, but if you can't hold them accountable. So this is a very important objective to me and certainly to Louis, who's here with his hat, but not.
Can't find this in here?
I put it together this morning.
Oh. Thank you.
But there's the statement is in there, the plan, fund, implement improvements.
That's okay. I'm just
okay.
Looking at this.
It's there. Go to number
38.
Yeah, 38.
I'm on 38. It just looks totally different.
By the way, this packet
all I did is just copy
is good.
Pasted.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yep.
Yeah. Technology
helped. Yeah. Plan, yes, technology.
The headers are different, okay? They're totally different.
It is. Yeah, I just, I make it big. So that we can see.
Okay, it's just through me. Thank you.
Yeah, it says the same thing. Plan, fund, and implement improvements to the treatment plants, systems that integrate, plant and systems that integrate technology and provide for industry standard efficient maintenance and operations. A lot of stuff in that statement. Industry standard gives me guidance, tells me I'm going to use current engineering principles, I'm going to make sure that things are engineered appropriately. That's going to cost money in both design and construction. Compliant means that we're in compliance with all the permits, that we are planning for that, that we're pulling all the necessary permits for work and following the construction processes appropriately. Integrate technology means that we're to remove waste from the paper sticky notes and
stubby
paper notes that don't ever make it to the right place to get on the customer account and be able to respond
much quicker, much more efficient. Mm-hmm. As we all know, technology comes with its own challenges. We don't have internal IT, but we definitely will we will benefit from technology in all aspects of the operation. And plan, fund, and implement improvements. I know that I'm going backwards a little bit. That comes to Maureen's statement about funding reserves, identifying the reserves and funding the reserves, and then making the improvements. In many cases, we did not do a good job of estimating our future operating expense. We did an okay job with estimating the future of projects and capital things that we had to do, but we, for whatever reason, we didn't anticipate that we were going to see 3, 5, 7, 10% increases in expenses. Maybe assuming that we were going to be able to hold salaries way down, or that fuel wasn't going to increase, or that, you know, and so you got to look at the whole thing when you look at costs. And that's sometimes why reserves don't make it to a reserve. But we will have that in the future. So that's what that means. Any disagreement with that? Support facilities and operations?
Nope.
Get out there. Support customer relations and outreach. This also was the same as it was has been written each time the board's seen it. Improve the image of the district and treatment of employees through a variety of actions that raise public awareness of the good work of the district. I mean, that doesn't take a heck of a lot of explanation. Okay. And I want to make sure these are your goals. If they're not your goals, you got to tell me, or we'll come up with different goals or more goals or whatever. District finance goals. This is a draft statement because we had a number of things to do. So let me get.
This is ensure the district adequate financial plans, right?
Yes. So I am.
Page 42.
Yeah, I don't have a page over this.
Yep, right here.
Okay.
I'll let you get there. I think is it item number 5?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Just want to make sure I got that right. In the detailed document, there's a number of to-do things, but in the management objectives, there was not an overall board goal statement. But when I looked at the to-do things and when I looked back at my notes that each of you put forward on the objectives you wanted, my brain created this statement. Okay, so you got to tell me if it's reflective of your goal or not. Ensure that the district has adequate financial plans. To invest in long-term infrastructure improvements, achieve regulatory compliance, protect public health, public and employee health and safety, and maintain service cost equity among the generations of customers. Do we understand what service cost equity means? It basically, right now, let's just say we're at 2% of the median household income. Our water and sewer bill is 2% of the median household income. That's just it's a benchmark.
Is that where we're at?
Yeah, or do you know? I opened my mouth. I knew you were going to ask that question. I don't have that calculation, but 2% is kind of what the legislature and the state looks at as
that's
an affordable amount. I would say that we're at a solid 2%.
Does that include the reserves, as Maureen had indicated?
It's everything that we charge. It's the amount that we charge compared to the amount of income on average. Okay. So the average customer rate, you know, we multiply times 12 compared to their household income.
So let me make an assumption here, which is a really dangerous thing to do. We stay at the same size, the cost, and don't gather any more people living up here, and the cost of water goes up, the cost of fire department goes up, the cost of treating the wastewater and maintaining the park keeps going up. We go past that 2%, that's not good. is it? I mean, we're going past the benchmark. What happens then? Do we just...
It's the other... It's
Am I misconstruing that?
It's an indicator. Let's not talk about affordability right now. Let's just talk about it as an indicator.
Okay.
Okay. Because in many cases, you'll see districts say, we want to provide water and sewer, fire and water services at the lowest possible cost. And that's their statement. And my question will be, at the lowest possible cost, regardless of how it affects everything? Because I can keep your costs down now, but in the future, your costs are going to go through the roof when things start happening. Because we can predict that future cost. We know what it is. We just have to predict it and say, okay, that's what it is, and then project it out. The exercise here is that if it's 2% of the median household income today for your water bill, 20 years from now, you want it to be 2% of the median household income. 40 years from now, you want it to be 2% of the median household income. You don't want to get to a situation where 20 years in the future, it's now 16% of the median household income because you didn't financially plan on the increase in cost.
Yeah, kind of what's going on.
Which is what, I early on in my career, man, I'll say it over and over, the head guy from the city of Portland, Oregon, in utilities, was giving a presentation, and he said, mark my words, if we don't pay attention to what we're doing, utility bills 20 years from now are going to rival our mortgage.
Mm.
And I'm telling you, they will. You know, and that's just because we've got many, many millions of dollars of infrastructure in the ground that we're not funding the reserves. You know, if we did a reserve study right now, if we did a full-on master plan, capital improvement plan, reserve study, how much money we needed to have to do all this stuff in cash, we would have to triple rates. Yeah. I wish Guy McCarthy was here right now.
Did he step out?
Leading red. He didn't ever come. No. But, I mean, seriously, it's a balancing act. You need to know what that ultimate need is, and then you've got to determine whether that's where you take into consideration that 2%. Are we okay with 4% going forward and keep it that way if that's what it takes? But that's...
It's better than going to 16% in 20 years. You know, and that's what's happened in this district. They've just passed it all down the way.
Well, they've cut costs at all costs, and now somebody's got to make up the difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way I see what's happening after a year of being here. It's...
It gets
nobody
really
likes
confusing
to pay more
to people, and you know, and I'm not putting your statements out there, but you're right on.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right on when it comes to reserves.
Yeah.
You've got two portions of that equation. You got your operating expense and you got your capital needs. And you gotta be good at estimating both, and you gotta stand firm. That's why managers are only around for 5 years, because when they tell you the truth and they stand on it and they jump up and down, they're down the road. And then all of a sudden you got to bite your backslide. And
whose fault is that? Oh, God. That's the board's fault.
You know, mm-hmm. But a lot of times it's because management doesn't stand firm that, hey, okay, let's get an outside third party. It's not me. I'm not analyzing this cost. Let's get this outside mm-hmm. person to look at this. And mm-hmm. once you set up those reserves, you're bound by law to hold to those reserves. So, good.
I've been pushing this for a long time that we're going to get caught, you know, and we're in trouble and we need to take care of this. It's amazing that people just cannot see that you got to replace all this stuff. But, I mean, ever since I've been on the board, nobody wants to raise rates. Everybody comes in and says how it's horrible. We pay our employees too much money. We do this, we do that. We're not open. We don't, it's amazing all the things you hear. And you try and educate people, and it still doesn't work. It doesn't. Certain people, to me, are never, ever going to admit that we need to put a lot of money in this infrastructure in our system, and we've let it go. People just don't want to see that. And they're willing just to go along and patch it as we go. And that's, it costs you way, way more money. And it's ridiculous. Same thing with the fire department. We haven't put money away. You know, that scares the crap out of me, that we don't put money away for all this stuff. It's horrible.
So that's my role is to, when I, the reason I raised that question about the equity is because that's a driving factor. Is it equity? Is it low cost today? Is it long term? Because that statement that I made here results in all of this other stuff going on and all of this stuff in the operations. You know, the master plans, the mapping, the GIS work, the digital representation of it, the decision-making tools, the financial forecasting, the rate studies, all of those things cost money, take effort, but they give you the, they really, we really haven't done a hell of a lot since 2001 in master planning and really, we haven't grown a lot, but now we're in this lull of we know what we've got, we pretty much know what we need. Now we need to analyze our current condition and our replacement strategy and how much that's going to cost. Yeah, and it's easier said than done. But
and how we get there from here. Yeah. And Pete, from where I sit right here, you just keep scaring us a little bit every board meeting, and don't wait till 3 or 4 years or it's 8 or 10 months down the road and scare us real bad. Keep scaring us a little bit at every board meeting about where we're at, and keep telling us stand firm on those things, the reserves, as you have been, and don't wait 5 or 10 months down the road and scare us real bad.
Well, I don't know.
And
how
you
that
keep asking the questions you're asking, Maureen. Asking those questions, ma'am.
On you.
All right.
Regulatory compliance. I'll just ask, is there anything in this statement that is counter to what the board believes or would like to do differently or add to it or doesn't believe in as a consensus?
I think it's good.
Okay. Bob?
That's fine. I'm trying to remember if we didn't we have financial plan goal.
We approved the objectives, but there wasn't a statement next to it. I was just structuring this in terms of a goal and then objective, and there was nothing there. There were a number of to-do items when I looked at your list of management objectives initially, and what we've gone through, but there was not a statement, an overarching statement next to it. And so I created that based off of what we've talked about. And then the last item, again, this is another one where there was not a specific statement next to it, but obviously I believe strongly in the administration being strong and competent, having the right tools, having the right training, having the right people to do the job. Provide the structure, process, and staffing for competent, transparent, and accountable governance and administration of all district services. Almost like a mission statement in itself.
It is a mission statement. I think it's kind of your mission statement.
How do you feel about that, Jennifer? I haven't asked that question. How's that statement feel to you?
That's what we strive to do every day.
Where are we in the transparency certification from CSDA?
We are in the application process, going through the checklist of what the district has, what the district almost has to apply for that.
Is there a way that you could put that on your information thing for the next agenda,
sure,
where we're at on the
Is
transparency?
Mm-hmm.
Please. I'm just curious on that. Those are all checkpoints that
we
can use to determine where we are as far as the rules.
I looked at that yesterday, actually, on the CSDA website.
We're like 99% there. There's like one or two items that we that are outstanding that we need to
get that transparency certification. Then we'll have that party you were talking about. Who's talking about the party?
Oh, me.
Yeah, Ronnie.
Yes, yes.
So, I'm just going to leave it to the board and those of you that have reviewed this. If there are any questions related to the objectives that I've got in here that support and go toward that goal, or any of the tasks, if there are any question or misunderstanding or disagreement with anything that you saw. I'm not going to get into detail.
My general comment is that there's a lot of them that actually need to have days assigned to them.
I didn't add any dates to all the new stuff. I wanted to have a conversation about priorities. In the very beginning, I thought, gosh, it's a great opportunity to set board priorities, and then I couldn't even think of anything we could pull off on there. So I don't know how you really set priorities. There are a few things that we probably could back off on a little bit. Some of the policy stuff and other things that take a lot of time. Just given the magnitude and need for some of the other stuff and the timeliness of it. But, yeah. So I'll return back.
Oh, no, my comment is that there are, it's fine. You've got them on some of them. There's quite a few objectives that, and they may have to be dates way out in the future in some cases because you don't know the question, and then hopefully we can pull them back in, but we need to have some sort of
sometimes
a point to expect.
It's a good point on. Yeah, that sometimes mentally I need to bring it down to the task level so that I know if there are some things that are going to take some time, and then I can plug in a date. So I figure in April, boy, I mentioned the April agenda three times.
Wow, yeah,
it's going to be a busy day, busy month.
I'll bring this back without all the task level stuff, but the goal and the objectives, which are the major to-do things, and that they can have a date associated with them, I'll have those either April or May.
Yeah, it's an ongoing thing, but it's,
This is as much a direction check-in as anything else. Are we thinking the same things? Are we going the right way?
So have you finished? You were completed?
I am done.
Okay, that's six. Any public comments? Yes.
This is a document that I looked at pretty thoroughly. This is what was on the website. Mm-hmm. So the first item was the draft salary expected April 9th. There's only meeting on the 9th. So change to 12th, is it correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll correct that.
And then you've got the next item was budgeting plan for new salary implementation. Is that going to be the 2019-2020 budget? I think that addresses Bob's question regarding times and dates. And
the MOU, yeah. It'll be subject to the MOU as well as the budget.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that includes the superintendent position as well as the admin services tech?
It will be every position, all of the positions that are, all of the positions in the district.
Okay.
Will be discussed as part of the salary structure.
And is the superintendent position, is that the $150,000 that was proposed way back in the June town hall for the sewer rates?
That's what I get when I open my mouth. just like talking about tripling rates, don't quote me on that. I'm just telling you. I'm not going to like the outcome. There is no $150,000 salary proposed for anybody.
Or is it fully loaded amount?
I don't remember. It was a bad estimate.
That was
probably at a bad time. But
okay.
We've gone through about 6 months of the process of talking about what the positions are, talking about what the responsibilities are, talking about the certification levels, talking about the organizational structure and how things relate, and then choosing the comparator agency so that we know where to set that schedule, and then the next step is to receive the report and consider where we go from there.
So I don't know if that answers your question. I mean,
is that position, the dollar amount, subject to, I mean, that's the whole point of the, well, not the whole point, but it's one of the points of the salary study, is to find out what that should be.
Okay, and that includes the admin services tech, that's at the $65,000 position you were talking about previously? That included, that was wages and benefits?
Fully loaded. Yeah.
Fully loaded, yes. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
On page 39, you have developed new financial reserve policy, all services. Mm-hmm. Technically, don't we have one already for the sewer rate?
We have a reserve, we have a statement that we're going to invest this amount and a budgeted statement of intent that this amount is going into reserves and this amount is going into capital projects.
All right, $100,000.
There's a specific action that the board takes when they establish a restricted reserve, and then it will be accounted for in the annual audit, and there are restrictions on the way that you handle that money. In other words, you can't just arbitrarily pull from that money.
Right, no, I understand
that. But no, restricted reserves have not been established for any fund within the district.
Because it's actually in your June proposed budget, as was the $300,000 capital outlay.
Mm-hmm. And it's in there for that purpose. It's in the budget for that purpose and being spent on that purpose.
Okay, but shouldn't it technically then be set aside?
The $100,000 will be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it being set aside?
It will be at the end of the year.
Okay.
The end of the fiscal year.
Which basically addresses the 2018-19 budget, or is it going to be?
We'll be closing out the 2018-19 budget,
right,
on June 30th.
Correct.
And we will look at if all of our other, we've got a fund balance, and we will establish a designated reserve. If you look at we've got a fund balance policy. There's a restricted reserve, there's a designated reserve, there's a general reserve, but we will be establishing a designated reserve for that $100,000 against what we haven't set yet. I mean, the $100,000 is going into a fund, going into a separate line within the fund, and then when the master plan is done, and if the master plan says we need $150,000, then that $100,000 will have to be increased to that.
Right.
But we'll also set up, when we get the master plan done, and that's adopted by the board, and everything's, we say, here are our rates going forward, we're going to implement this thing to its fullest, then there will be a restricted reserve policy that the board adopts, and that restricted reserve policy will have a timeline every year, and it's usually in September because I want you to close out the fiscal year, make sure everything balances, and then you have a board action that does that move of funds from your fund balance, which is just your cash, into that restricted reserve, and then it stays in that restricted reserve. You watch it.
I have a follow-up question to this. Wasn't part of the presentation back in June when we were doing the sewer rate increase, wasn't the assumption that $100,000 would be set aside for restricted reserves and $300,000 for capital outlay, and then there's a $61,394 annual loan payment, and we don't know what that's for. That's really not been explained clearly.
Okay, we're going back and forth. I answered the questions in a separate response to you, and we're asking the same questions again, and I'm glad to respond to it. And I've answered this at least 5 times in this meeting. The rates were based on a budget. The budget has an amount of money that's going to be spent every year on improvements to the system, and that is occurring. There's a capital budget. There's an amount that's being spent on replacement and upgrades, drying beds, pipes, pumps, fixtures, valves, all of those things, okay? That was intended to be spent each and every year, invested in the infrastructure, okay? It was $100,000, which was an arbitrary number, not based on anything other than knowing we've got
tens of millions of dollars of infrastructure under the ground that hasn't been analyzed to determine exactly when it needs to be replaced, that is that the board needs to begin to set aside a certain amount of money every year toward the ultimate replacement of the infrastructure. Okay, so that's $100,000. So you will see at the end of this fiscal year that we will have in our financial statements that will go in the audit a designated reserve, okay, a designated reserve of that $100,000. If we're not able to designate that $100,000 for whatever reason at the end of the budget year, there'll be specific action of the board to explain publicly why that money is not able to be designated. And it should have been, if we had to replace some of the infrastructure that what that money was designated for and had to have some early replacement, there should be some linkage between why that money was spent and it's the purpose that we charged it. Okay? This is an interim solution. That is a budget action. We budget for it. We spend it. We spend it on capital projects, or we put it into, we designate it as a designated reserve. Okay, so it shows up in our financial statements. It goes into the audit. Then the next action of the board is that when we get the master plan done, and we're probably talking about a year from now, just because of the cost and the complexity of this and everything that just keeps coming into this equation, and seeing if we're going to get the money for this, for the sewer project that we, you know, $6 million project, it's good to know whether we're going to get that money. Otherwise, it's got to be part of this equation. Once we establish that final number that we need X amount of dollars, like I said, maybe it's 150 instead of 100, maybe it's 200,000 a year, the board will adopt a policy that restricts that, turns it from a designated reserve into a restricted reserve. And it's tied specifically to that master plan and capital improvement plan. I mean, they're tied, they're married. If the master plan says you need to set aside $150,000 a year, and in 2025 you're going to spend this amount, 2050 you're going to spend this amount, then that restricted reserve is set up and limited for expenditures on only those things, money in, money out, into that every year, and it will show in our cash as restricted. It will not have the ability to be able to be spent on anything for any purpose other than what it's restricted for. And that policy has not yet been adopted. But it is absolutely the intent of the board and management, and there's no mistake on what that purpose of that money is for. And it's being spent on that. And it'll be budgeted for that.
Okay, are we? Yes.
Can I ask you a question about this after the meeting? I don't want to take up any more time.
Sure.
Can I just ask you a question about this after the meeting? Thank you.
Okay. So, we are bringing
this. I'll look for just a consensus that we're good with the goals.
Yes.
As stated,
yes.
I think we might through each one individually. And then I'll return with the objectives for the timeline.
So, I move to direct staff to prepare a updated slate of management objectives, including modifications, priorities, and schedules discussed for board action in April.
Second person. Okay, let's call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, item 6D, consideration of options for live video streaming and video archive of district board.
Kind of an interesting topic. It was something that came up fairly early on.
Page 45.
When I was at Tuolumne Utilities District, and the board there chose to install a video camera and use an agenda management program called Granicus. Granicus is now used by the county, by, you know, hundreds of entities
in the western United States and throughout the country. But I've outlined some of the other options that districts use to get out to a broader audience. And this does support the objectives we just talked about. We have a very focused and small group of people that come and get involved in our board meetings. And it's always nice to be able to say, when they call in, hey, what happened here? What's going on? What are you guys doing about this? Say, hey, go to the board meeting from last, you know, from March 12th. And about halfway through that meeting, when we talked about that particular topic, if you're interested. And it's really helpful for people to be able to do that, that can't make it to the meeting, don't want to make it to the meeting, for whatever reason.
Not room for them to sit down. There's a small board.
I don't like our faces. But Facebook Live and YouTube are two common things. Facebook Live, I really like it for when you got a couple of team members on the go that are sitting in a car and want to have a meeting with somebody else and can do it by Facebook. Not a huge fan of it for public agencies, you know, because some people just, they don't want to be involved.
You've got to join Facebook to do it, yeah.
And have to weed through all that you have to go through on Facebook to do it. But it definitely functions. You know, and I've outlined in this document a little bit about what is involved. And again, this is just an initial introduction. If we're interested in moving forward with something, I'll bring back more specifics. Just takes a little bit of research. YouTube is a common venue. Basically, right now, we probably have a video camera sitting up here in this corner. It would videotape the entire proceedings. At the end of the meeting, the next day, we go and upload it to YouTube. So to take that to our meeting, and it would be available for streaming. People would have to scroll through it and listen for a little bit to make sure they're at the right spot. You know, sometimes you can tag the video and say, you know, these agenda items happened at this time.
I would almost suggest if we're going to do that, like as we kind of move from big topic to big topic, we kind of make a rough time hack on it.
Yeah.
So that, like you were saying, if you referred to somebody, you could say go into about 12:11.
You could just could reprint the agenda and have a time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and amount of time in. Yeah. So it's just a little bit more effort on the part of staff to, you know, take that video, upload it, tag it. Granicus, and the only reason I got into a lot of detail there wasn't to promote it by any means. It's just, it's completely different than the other two venues. This is agenda management. You basically upload a Word document into it. It takes your Roman numeral agenda items, turns those into hyperlinks that are linked to the staff document that are then tagged on the video. Generates your minutes at the end of the board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
How much staff time does Granicus incur?
Granicus will save staff time. The others, I don't know about Facebook Live, but I know with YouTube, it probably add a couple hours to the post-meeting setup. You know, not a huge thing, but, you know,
staff an time hour. Precious.
Sounds mm-hmm. like Granicus is the one.
Well, but
what's the cost?
I don't have a cost proposal yet. Right. But when I was the video cameras to get a decent setup, I don't think we're going to be much more than $10,000. I'm guessing at this point.
So you're saying a webcam ain't going to cut it?
Well, you could. Yeah, you could. You're not going to really see your face from up there, and you know you can. I mean, you could probably get a couple $100 webcam and tie it in, but the like I said, it's not going to exceed that. We can set a budget much less than that.
Is there an actual fee for the program, Granicus?
For Granicus, yes. There's a software purchase amount set up, and you get an you basically the options are you have a fixed encoder that goes here that streams it live. So it's live. It's live and it's archived. So someone could actually sit at home and be watching this meeting right now. And then, so if you've got an encoder which streams it from here, and the other option is that you've got an encoder in a suitcase, basically. So it would be portable. It's something, if we had a Wi-Fi, so you'd have to have a Wi-Fi or a wired signal somewhere else, like at the elementary school. We'd have to get into their Wi-Fi, tie the encoder into it, but it's in a suitcase so that you can set it up there and you can do your meeting from there. You know, set your camera up on a tripod and off you go. So there's a lot of flexibility with that. I'm sure that the encoder in a suitcase is more money. We haven't, again, we haven't gotten a proposal. We went through a little brief meeting with them, online meeting last week. But I provided you some links because it's helpful from the perspective of if you want to find an agenda topic, if you're interested in Groveland or Terrapin Lodge, you go into the keywords, you type in Terrapin, and every time it was on the agenda or reflected in the minutes, it would come up in the keywords. You click on that link on that agenda item, and it would take you right to that segment of the video and put the staff report right here. Wow. So on your screen, you got the video and you got the staff report.
So that would really solve the issue of people wanting more
verbatim minutes. Yeah.
Because now they have nothing. They could get anything out of them.
Everything.
That's the goal. More information out to more people. There's only a few folks that come to the meetings. We're getting ready to ask for some serious changes in the way the district functions. The more information that's out there to more people that live here, the 3,200 and some odd customers, the 3,200 voters that are here, they need to have access to that information. This can't be underestimated enough.
Mm-mm. Plus, it would ideally put an end to the ongoing have meetings in the evening, have meetings on the weekend, more people would come, and then you have meetings on the evening and meetings on the weekend, and nobody comes. I mean, if you were interested in going, whether you're in San Jose or, you know, in Big Old Flat, you could log on and listen to the meetings.
With at home with a beer and a bowl of chips, too.
Live, or you could do it later.
Yes, yeah.
In your pajamas.
Sorrows.
With respect to Granicus, so this is... So,
bowl of chips and beer.
Did you get an idea of exactly what's involved in doing this agenda maintenance from your conversation with them?
Yeah, it seems pretty straightforward and pretty user-friendly.
Okay, because there's still quite a bit of, to have all of these links, somebody has to set all the links up. And I realize you can probably just do that with a punch, and somebody's got to go through it. Does it put any constraints on the construction of what the agenda has to look like so that it can recognize? Obviously, you have to have Roman numerals.
The numbering. You just tell it what numbers to look at for your agendas.
I mean, the outcome of it sounds great. I'm just concerned about how much additional staff effort is going to be required to make it work. Because I don't know how good the interface is.
It takes the step out of loading things on the website. It takes the step out of having to individually name items exactly a certain way that I like to do. I mean, Jennifer and I work back and forth on the crunch time to get things put together. But there's you've got the agenda. And you've got a folder, and you just drag it over, and it hyperlinks, and you drag it, and it hyperlinks. And so each of the individual agenda documents is really just a click and drag, and then it's automatically linked. So it's just using their agenda template, which when you look at, for example, TUDs, it didn't cast that. And I'm not promoting TUD by any means or their transparency. But I mean, it looks pretty much the same. It's a little different format, a little wider.
little, you know, just kind of like just a basic Times Room, New Roman business document, rather than, you know, having wider margins and stuff. That's what it looks like. But then any of the, again, they're all named the same, agenda attachment, staff report. You can name it any way that you want, but this really tells somebody that if they want to review a staff report for that item, there it is. And when you're setting it up, you've just got two screens. You got a folder screen with all your files in it that are PDF, and you've got this agenda screen, and you just drag it and drop it where it says attachment staff report automatically. So it's so and then it's up on the web. It's already.
Yes, I'm getting too much into. I can talk to you about this afterwards.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
It's just a
yes.
I see in some of the goals we got a SCADA upgrade. That's IT. I see in some of the goals you're getting some new fund balance software. What's it called? The new software that you're using in here?
Asset management
software. And we're looking at this. Are we working our way towards an IT type employee?
We're working our way towards a reliable and available IT consultant.
Okay.
Because employees, what happens when the network goes down and that employee is on vacation, then you got to find that consultant. We don't have full-time work. We have a hell of a lot. But it's because we're disheveled. We're all over the place with stuff. When stuff is together and dialed in and people can come into it from outside and we got a contractor that has it in their head, which we're working on now, it should be pretty automatic.
I'd
love to have so many internal spins. It's just
well, I'm not promoting that. I'm just saying, are we headed that way? And
we're headed toward having this dialed in. Yeah, okay. We're good. Within 24 to 48 hours of resolving any issue, that's kind of our mantra right now.
I'm all for all the IT upgrades, SCADA, asset management, screening video, get the information out there.
Let's. I think we've discussed it enough. So let's. I want to move to authorize the staff to evaluate the options and costs for streaming video of the district board meeting, and prepare a proposal for the board consideration during the regular meeting, with the date of April 12th.
I need to get that right.
Yes, that's okay.
I'll second.
Thank you very much, John, and we'll open it to the public.
Yes, I'd like to. Read you what you've got here in your submittal. It says GCSD, as with most small governments, has have an overall lack of public understanding of the district services and the challenges and the opportunities we face every day. That's no different than a lot of directors that don't know what's going on every day. But then you go on to say the public rarely attends board meetings, and those who do typically represent a small interest segment in the community and tend to regularly articulate their views to the board in this public setting. Meetings are in fact the only time the board can sit together and hear from the public, so it can be difficult to truly understand the needs and interests of the community by hearing only from a small group of vocal individuals. Personally, I come from myself. I represent six other people who cannot make the meetings. So I take issue with the way that you're summarizing that there's just a small group of people. A lot of people do not attend the meetings because they're too long, they work. There's a lot of different reasons. That did not need to be put in this agenda submittal, okay? I supported four board members on this board. You have to answer to us, the public, okay? It's our right to come and ask questions. So this does not come across very nice when you read it. But all of that aside, I need to know if this is going to be in color or black and white. Because it's going to affect the color lipstick that I wear. Thank you.
Well, let's go for
well,
color.
If you're black and white, you got to wear red lipstick.
Well, the camera's going to be up there, so it's going to get the
just show the back of your head.
It's going to get the root job touch-ups.
Well, I want to tell you something.
Not the color of your lipstick.
The board of supervisors has a camera that shows the audience and the board, so you know. That's how they do it. So, okay. But this statement really did not need to be put in there because it really goes after the few of us that do attend and represent other people that cannot make it.
Okay, I'm sure it was not intended to insult anybody.
That's how it comes across.
Well, not to everybody. It comes across as we need to open this up to more of the constituents.
That's what was trying to be said.
That's what was the intent, and that's what the board feels also.
Color.
But the,
so.
It's going to be in color? All right.
And we're having it in color.
You know?
Okay, so, any other public comment? Okay, we'll close the discussion to the public, and we will ask for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Another April agenda.
Maybe.
You might want to think about a special meeting.
Yeah, in there too. Yeah.
One topic.
Okay. Item 6E, adoption of a resolution approving an amendment to the district miscellaneous fee schedule to remove and adjust fees associated with discontinuation of the water service due to non-payment.
Right, so I'm sure the board remembers back in November, I brought before the board a miscellaneous fee schedule because the district didn't really have one that existed. The district provides a lot of services that are customer initiated. Please go turn off my water. Please do this. Please do that. And we weren't charging any fees for that. We're still paying the employees to do it, and generally the community as a whole was subsidizing the cost. So what we were trying to do is capture when there's these individual requests that are customer-generated that they pay for that service. Within that was the disconnection fees, because there's a lot of staff time that's associated with disconnection of water service due to non-payment. We monitor the accounts, we send out the late notices, we issue phone calls to them, we send somebody out to go turn off the water, then we send somebody back out to turn the water back on. And we tried to capture that accurately when we originally brought the fee schedule to the board. However, the board recalled at the last meeting we had Senate Bill 998 that was approved that is going into effect in February of 2020 that regulates what the district's allowed to charge with regard to disconnection of water service for low-income customers. So that kind of threw a wrench in what we just previously approved at the November meeting. So with that said, once the board approved this fee schedule, it went to legal counsel reviewed it. Within the interim of that, the new Senate bill came out, and so we haven't actually published these because we were going through that process. And so I felt since we hadn't published it, the new law will be coming into effect here in February, a year from now, is right around the corner, that we might as well just implement it now so we're not having to revisit this again. Mm-hmm. And send out another revised fee schedule for the customers for that. As the submittal states, the new Senate bill that's becoming law only is applicable to low income, and the district have looked at, well, we still impose the fees for the non-low income, but then the Senate bill has a laundry list of the verification process of what you have to do, what qualifies, the different things you have to offer, and it would end up adding a tremendous amount of work to the admin staff to do that. So if we just set the standard at that level where we're already taking those steps, we don't have to go through a burdensome verification process. So, long story short, that's why this is again in front of the board to amend the fee schedule to make it compliant with the new law that will be taking place, and then we'll be publishing it in the bills and implementing the fees going forward.
So is the fact that the reason that you dropped the disconnection fee altogether because that's prohibited in this law, or
it only allows you you can only charge a $50 they call it a reconnection, but it's the same thing, disconnection fee.
There's disconnection, there's reconnection, right?
Not under the bill was said that the same.
There used to be. We regard it as two things. We shut it off, and then if they get back into proper status, then we turn it back on.
Previously, we only charged a disconnection fee. When I brought this back to the board, I added the reconnection because I felt it should have been two fees, but this law won't it's not. They look at a reconnection, disconnection, the fee associated with the water being discontinued as one.
As service, yeah. You can only charge for one.
So, all right. Yeah. So they just assume that you're going to reconnect eventually.
They call it a reconnection fee.
Because I'm just saying, say somebody disconnects and then they never reconnect. Pretty small potatoes.
They probably just wouldn't be charged for the disconnect.
Yeah, well, we charge them, and I guess that's another thing, because we charge, when the disconnection
happens. Actually, now that I think about it, it's kind of pointless, because you wouldn't be able to collect from them unless they reconnected anyhow, because if they just went away, you're not going to pay the disconnection fee, because they're going to be paid. That's the whole point of the shutoff fees. Never mind.
To get their water back.
Yeah.
Somebody else is going to pay to reconnect.
Thanks, Bob, yeah.
Never mind.
So any changes to this since we voted on it last time are in red on the backup paperwork. Everything else is good.
That we adopt resolution 2019-8 approving an amendment to the district miscellaneous fee schedule to remove and adjust fees associated with disconnection, discontinuation of water service due to non-payment.
I'll second that.
Okay. Bring the subject to the public. Any comments?
I just want to let you know, since I do read everything, thank you for taking away that $5
charge.
Yeah, I don't want you to think I didn't see it. I'm like, yes, because if they can't afford to pay the bill, what's the point of the $5 charge?
$5 for a phone
call. Thank you.
Any other comments? Okay, back to the board for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous. Okay, item 6F, adoption of a resolution approving a policy providing requirements for district staff use of credit cards for general purchasing.
Let's go ahead and pull this item.
Okay.
It's not an urgent matter.
Okay.
But there's a resolution that is not part of our policy.
Okay.
It didn't get included in the OPPM policy.
Okay.
Say that again. I'm sorry. There's a resolution. Well, there's a resolution right here. Is this the resolution?
No. That's a resolution adopting the policy. But there was no credit card policy in the OPPM, which is the operating policy procedure manual, because it was not updated in 04 when this resolution was adopted, or whether this resolution was superseded by the OPPM and amendments thereto. There was no notation or anything in the OPPM. It's just a procedural matter. Normally when we adopt a policy, the first thing we do is we'll go out and look, do we have any other actions, do we have any other resolutions, we have to go through the OPPM. Didn't I short-circuited the process here and went and got the, looked through the OPPM, didn't find it, put it on the agenda, but didn't have Jennifer look at the old resolution, so thank you.
But you do have that resolution, or do you need
it? Yeah, we got it.
Okay, yeah. I brought my copy.
That's why it's not a huge conflict, but I want to get it. There's not...
Do we actually need to have, isn't this a procedure rather than a policy?
A lot of it is the policy statement in the resolution.
The policy is basically yes, you can you're authorized to issue credit cards to people for useful purposes. Yeah. That's the policy.
Right.
Everything else is procedure.
Which you're correct. The thing that that I'm learning with outside independent auditing firms that are becoming more and more
they want to see
challenged is they sometimes want, they would rather see a little bit of procedure in the policy to make sure that there's checks and balances, things that would normally be a no-brainer are now being called on the carpet, which is great.
Okay.
The old resolution back from August in 2004 had a limit for each thing. The new one doesn't, and I would like to see a limit there.
We have purchasing limits.
We don't know.
There's purchasing.
But this was for the Visa card.
No, I know, but I'm saying the purchasing policy limits what each position's allowed to purchase, which is applicable to the credit cards as well. It's
but
overall purchasing.
Yeah. The purchasing policy, though, does this limits the general manager, and I don't think I've ever picked up a credit card here, but and will not. But this does limit the general manager, but the purchasing policy within the budget, there's not a limit. So I could purchase something for $20,000 according to the purchasing policy, but this limits it. I couldn't do it on a credit card. I could do it on a purchase order, but not a credit card.
Okay.
And there's also something called CalCard. Are you familiar with CalCard? The government card, and when it gives you this, it's no annual fee, and when it does the statement at the end, it'll show you which employee you charge, which amount on one statement, and it's a really a good thing. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Pretty much all credit cards will do that. You issue a card to a specific person, and your statement will show all the charges for that specific card, which you know you've assigned to that specific person. So each credit card statements will do that for you.
Well, each card has been charges.
Each card. You have to have a different card number for each.
Oh,
thank
you.
This account.
Is all in one.
That's okay.
Yes, we're pulling this item. And
yeah, we're pulling
we're
it. We're getting
it,
all
so.
The information.
Well,
out.
Yeah. I will bring it back.
Okay.
We're getting giddy.
Well, I learned that you can't table for you for more than 1 month, so it's...
You're going to bring it back
yeah.
in for a while?
Well, no, not necessarily. If you can pull it, but you don't say you're tabling it, then you don't have a deadline to
you
it.
You can
yeah.
just vote this down, and then you can bring it back.
No, the policies say don't do that.
Right. Okay. So we're
yeah.
just going to skip this item.
This
yeah.
No problem.
Okay.
So
moving on to item.
Pulling it, right?
Yes,
yeah.
we're pulling
okay.
it. Moving on to item G, consideration of establishing restrictions on the district's abandonment of interest in public utility easement existing on properties throughout the district.
Oh, this is. This
Manifold.
One's been driving me bananas. If there's anything about the district and some of the practices that we've had that concern me, it is the fact that we've historically just granted these abandonments of public utility easements when the surveyor comes in and pounds their fist and says, this person needs this easement abandoned, there's no need for it, I've looked at it, we go out in the field, we look at it, it doesn't really, there's no plan for a sewer on that easement in the future, there's nothing there currently, that's all we got to make a decision, then our policy allows us to be able to abandon these public utility easements, the general manager can just write a letter and it goes to the county, and the electric company and cable company has already said forget it, and off they go. Probably hundreds of them in reality. We looked at a maximum year, I think it was 25 or something like that, and last year was 13. So somewhere, I say between 10 and 40 in a year. And it comes when a property owner chooses to purchase a lot next to them and then create it as a single legal parcel for the purpose of taxation and to have more use of that property or whatever. I have submitted this to legal counsel to determine whether it's a true statement that easement needs to be abandoned, because if they're just combining it to make a single legal parcel, they could still have an easement down the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's kind of a package deal that these people are giving us. We're getting rid of all the easements. It becomes one big parcel. Now you got use of the whole property. The dilemma that we're having is that when you look at our access to some of our locations, you can't get there from here. You can't go straight down the hill. You can't get there from the road. You can't get there from this end because there's a house or a building or a fence or this or that. You can't. And part of it is because we've abandoned the public utility easement and somebody has built in that location now.
So we'll have access, 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 nothing, nothing, access, access, and it's bad. It's a normal practice. I do believe in private property rights. If somebody wants to, if we can abandon an easement, and an engineer or surveyor or somebody says there is no possible way that anybody could ever need access to that whatsoever, never, no way, and it's not going to interfere cumulatively or anything else, I'm good with it. But we can't make that decision. Louis can't make it. I can't make it. We don't have the graphical or technological tools necessary to make that, to look at that overall. We are looking at a technology tool to take all of our existing easements for sewer and water and anything else and map those. So in other words, we pull up a digital map, you got a blue line that says you've got a 15-foot easement here, and we'll be able to, you know, see the continuity of these and everything. And the public utility easements. So next thing, each and every parcel, pine, mountain, lane, you know, public utility easements mapped on this tool so that we can see, can we even walk into this location? You know, because in the public utility easement, we can walk in there. We can ride a dirt bike, an ATV, a truck. We can take a crane in there. We can pull a generator in there. We can, you know, and it does go through people's backyards and everything. But so anyway, I'm strongly recommending that we take an action to put a halt on it for now, understanding that I'm going through some legal review to make sure that, you know, what the best practice is. And if it's just for convenience for a property owner to abandon it, it's a no. If it's a necessity and we absolutely don't need it and we get the engineering stamp that says, okay, then we can do it. And this may be one where I put this back on the board. Right now the policy allows me to be able to do it. I may have it only, I may recommend that it has to come back to the board because it makes me nervous. Me just, I feel like I'm just sending her life away every time I sign them. Yeah.
Is it possible to allow these erasure of easements with a asterisk saying if we need to come back to this at some time, we're not going to have to purchase the easement back from you? I mean, we're not giving them, they're not giving us money to release it, correct?
I'll resolve that. That's a legal question. We, in many cases, we've said, okay, we don't need the easement here, but we do here. And we usually get it dedicated to us, and it's a done deal. You know, no cost to us. But I still think we don't catch it in every case. But I think it would be a little unconventional to restrict future property owners by agreement to somewhere on your property we might need a piece of ground. It would, well, from a title report perspective, somebody might say, ooh, that, you know, but if we identified the area,
right,
from an engineering perspective, we should be able to identify whether we need that PUE or whether we don't. We just need it. We need to be able to see it, you know, spatially, graphically. We gotta.
What's the typical engineering fee to have?
I would say it's probably going to add $500 or so to the abandonment process, plus our processing fee, because we still have to go out and take a look at it and work with the engineer. So it could approach $1,000, you know, that the property owner has to pay to, you know, if they're willing to do it, really want to proceed with it, we'll send it to our engineer and we'll go through the process, even now, before the maps get developed. Ultimately, we'll make it more cost effective when the maps are done. We can look at it internally here. And
okay, John, did you have a question?
I just comment is that, you know, those easements were put there for a reason, and we need to be careful with that. And I agree with this. I think we should go ahead and do this. And, you know, we should make sure that before we abandon any easement that we're never, ever going to need it. Because, yeah, I agree.
Okay.
You're going to have one mad little hornet in
these surveyors that have been getting a really, really good deal for decades. Wow. With. I'm just saying.
No, you're right. Yeah. I just my recollection. I remember when I first joined the board, learning about this a little bit, and it appears that for much of the history of the district, the practice was simply the surveyor came in, asked for the easement release, and the general manager signed it off.
Yeah.
And even I think maybe now we've actually gone back to, or I mean, a few years ago we started going back to actually sending somebody out to have a look at it before doing that. But even still, as you say, that, you know, eyeballing it and saying, well, gee, I guess we don't need that.
No, we need.
We've still been signing them off. So I tend to agree with the idea that you should engage the engineer and get a.
Okay, because the topography here is different than anywhere.
This is a little bit of padlocking the door after the horse.
And the property ownership is really convoluted up here. These aren't little square lots. I mean, I can pull up a piece of software that shows you these lots are way weird shaped, and I think maybe even further bring it to the board, to where the board has to approve the change in these easements, because that's going to require more information.
That's what Pete was saying.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with that.
Any other, is that it for, okay, so.
I make a move.
Yes.
I move to direct staff to require review and approval of all public utility easements abandonment requests by the district engineer prior to releasing district interest in said easement, and to propose language modifying the district easement policies accordingly.
I'll second that motion, and we'll bring it to the public.
A question. Does each lot in Pine Mountain Lake have an easement?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when you merge the two lots together, okay, is it possible after they're merged, if someone's going to sell it, and the people that are buying just want the one with the house, or they want the one next door, that's been, to undo that once it's been merged? And then you're out, then you don't have an easement there? Is that possible?
The CCNRs at Pine Mountain Lake prohibit splitting lots. So you sell
splitting
the lot.
Splitting lots? No, not splitting them.
No, if it's merged, you can't
this lot,
split it.
I buy the one next to me.
Once it's merged, it's one.
Once it's merged,
you
can't
split, split it.
The CCNRs prohibit splitting it.
Can they change the CCNRs?
Oh, sure.
I just don't know. Just.
Right, but right now you couldn't do that. I mean, right now a person could not do that. Right. If you've merged a lot, it's merged.
It's merged. You can't.
You have to
say
sell the whole bloody
thing. Split it back to where it was, and I'm going to sell this piece and keep it.
Because the reason that they never changed that is because they were trying to avoid the notion where people were going to merge lots and pay one fee and then split them and then sell them off. Okay. So you can still merge them, but you because they they failed to prohibit that in the CCNRs, but you can't split them.
So any other public comment?
There was an incident where they split a lot.
Well, you're not supposed to be able to.
The board voted two brothers inherited some property. Mm-hmm. They couldn't get a lot.
So they gave them an exception.
Yeah, they board voted to do that. They did split it. So.
It's kind of like the line down the middle of the room when you were a kid.
My boys
don't
did that.
Come across this line.
There was
you split a room in thirds, did you know that? We did that when I was a girl.
Avoid merging lots at all.
Yes.
They're going to take that where they said they can't do it anymore. And so we did get flooded with a whole bunch of easement abandoned at that time. You said, next year, we're not doing it. So.
Yeah, but that failed.
I think so. But for this discussion, we have two lines. We have one 10-inch main line that runs underneath somebody's house because of an abandoned easement. They literally found it when they were doing their addition. So they have a master bedroom above a 10-inch water main.
High pressure, too, I might add, isn't it?
It's a transmission line.
Yeah.
That's nice. So could be floating on the ceiling. And now they would never have known it was there, but their septic were digging and they found it. And they already had the footings and everything, and all the footings poured and everything. And we have another house that sits right directly above our sewer line.
Nice.
It's a gravity line, but still, there's, you know, half the house is sitting on top of it because there was no easement. So
there is a third incident of that where the house, the high-pressure water line coming from tank one is right on the edge of the guy's lot. His driveway is right there. His flower bed's right here. He had 1-inch rebar putting it in like this. Hit that pressure line, and I was out there with these guys for hours fixing that thing. We cut off water to the whole place because they didn't pay attention to the easement. They're ultimately very important.
They are important. That's my point.
Ultimately, and this goes along...
Rebar could have killed him.
Yeah. Your vision, Spence, that you laid out of the 72-inch TV with all the technology graphics of being able to see that, because, you know, when a customer calls and says, hey, do I have any easements, our staff is able to pull it up in there and say, yeah, but, you know, not only do you need to call for USA, but you definitely have a sewer easement there if you're going to put it in a driveway. It helps the county, too, because the county will have access to that mapping, and when they go to issue a permit for something, they can look and see, wait a minute, you're paving over a, you know, a, you're paving over a sewer line, you better get a hold of GCSD.
Yeah.
You know? So, anyway, that's the, that's, you know, several thousand dollars out in the future.
Right.
But we're definitely working for it.
Okay, we're going to close the comments to the public and...
Got to do this one.
Yeah, take a vote on this 6G. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, all approved. Unanimous. Okay. The additional item added to the agenda, the Cooperative Fire Protection Services. Pete, would you like to take this?
I don't have a lot to add to the written narrative. It's going to be structured to some degree after a well-functioning intern-type program. You know, it is looking for funding to be able to get volunteers and equipment and compensation to make sure that we have adequate staffing. Just the typical volunteer system doesn't function the way that it used to. So this will be able to provide incentives to those volunteers to get involved and hopefully get a new breed, a new round of firefighters moving forward, and maybe some committed longer-term volunteers or interns. It's great to see Cal Fire get behind a program like this because 10 years ago, when they were headed on their march toward Cal Fire being the state fire department, volunteers were not in their sights. Yeah. Now they just can't get enough staff to keep enough people on. And, you know, so anyway, this is a grant with no match. It's in cooperative agreement with all of these entities that are listed on the MOU. Normally we would do this by resolution, but this came up at such a last minute. You could either, if you choose to adopt it by motion, and move to approve the grant agreement or the memorandum of understanding, or it could be, you could approve it as a resolution. We could number a resolution and it just referenced the MOU. So that it was in the title of the resolution. I mean, just kind of making that up on the fly.
Can't we put it like a resolution number up here? 2019-20 or whatever it is?
We have a 2019
dash. 19.
Yeah, 19. No. I think that's a good idea. I'm just trying to make sure I have the right. I think it's.
Make sure
I have
the right number.
I think it's resolution. It would be resolution 2019-11.
So this would be 2019-11.
She's checking.
So the resolution would just say, whereas the district is has access to the SAFER grant program. And whereas it's the board's intent to apply for it, now therefore be it resolved that we're authorized to submit the application.
And that was positive.
The credit card one is 10.
Okay, so then it'll be 10 because we didn't do the credit card one.
Well, so this is 10. So this recommendation here, we just use that as the...
It's all written in there.
Yeah, so I recommend staff... I move that we recommend staff to authorize Board of Tuolumne County Fire Department to apply for a regional staffing for adequate fire and emergency response, SAFER, volunteer firefighter recruitment and retention grant and enter into a memorandum of understanding with various fire departments for recruitment and retention of volunteer firefighters throughout the county, and to allow the chair of the county, the Tuolumne Board of Supervisors, to sign the MOU.
So that's actually the recommended action for the county board of supervisors.
Oh, okay.
That's I think for us.
So I,
for us,
you should have told me to shut up earlier.
Didn't get your attention.
I was waiting to do that, but you wouldn't shut up.
I suggest that you modify that to resolve that the board of directors authorizes staff.
I think that's a good one, whatever bonds that.
To sign the MOU attached, which will be attached, regarding the, whatever that thing is, staffing for adequate fire and emergency response volunteer firefighter program.
Okay.
I'll second that.
I couldn't have said it better. I
you
pulled mine.
Say it better, yeah.
This will be referred to as resolution.
It'll be in resolution
19-10.
Okay.
Perfect.
Any public comment? Okay. Let's take a vote.
The motion?
I did. All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Okay. Are there any director comments? We're winding up our meeting here.
Good meeting.
It was a good
meeting. I have a couple.
Yes, sir.
Is it just, and we already sort of touched on this, but I actually want to bring it up.
Director comments?
We're still allowed to have director comments. It doesn't have to be on.
Okay, yeah. Because it's not on here. I didn't know.
It's not an action item.
I
don't know when it's going to be. But
okay.
Reserve money. Okay. Occurred to me when I was reading the objectives and we were talking about the financial stuff, whatever. Quite some time ago, when we approved the water rate increase, we said at the time that the amount of the increase that wasn't used, essentially anything that wasn't used for ongoing operations, that we're going to put it into a restricted reserve. We never said that. So can you look into what's involved in us actually making a restricted reserve? Because I noticed that the water fund balance is pretty healthy right now. Mm-hmm. And so some of that I'd like to suggest a future action item, I guess, to discuss actually moving some of that in, setting it, figuring out how to do a restricted reserve and setting it up. Bearing in mind, and I'm just going to put this out informationally, that we can't actually do a completely fully restricted reserve. There's a thing authorized in the public law that allows us to set it up, but it's still, if you had a unanimous vote of all five board members, they could still take money out of it. But at least it sets it into a little, behind a little fence. And I think, you know, it's been quite a while since we raised the water rates. I think we ought to consider doing something about that. I'm just, it's a director comment, I'm just suggesting have that for an actual discussion item at some point.
Via the 2015 approved water rate study, you raise them annually since then.
So, and the water, I mean, if you look, our water fund balance has been growing, so that's good. We haven't been spending it all, and I'm just saying we should probably consider actually doing what we said we were going to do and put it into a separate reserve account.
Yeah, I'd like to do a two-step process, the first step being an introduction to the different types of reserves and what the restrictions are. And then the second one would be we would get some direction about what we're going to restrict, because it's very restrictive. We can't do a budget amendment and draw from restricted reserves. The restricted reserves are going to show up as not available cash in our financial statements. So when we go to borrow money and things, it's restricted for a different purpose. It's not in our cash flow. So it's a big deal.
We did actually say we were going to do that. I mean, I remember saying it, the words coming out of my own mouth. So I'd like to see us take steps towards that direction.
And not being here at that time, is that something the board promised it would do?
Yeah, I mean, it was part of the presentation. I don't think affect the protest votes. I think the people that were going to protest protested anyhow, but still, we said we were going to do it.
We're the only two that are left.
I would like to see better, well, I know it's already changed, better track of things that the board has said we are going to do, and then it actually gets done, rather than waiting.
Right.
You know, however.
Well, it's kind of, you know, yeah. We had a general manager transfer and a couple of other things.
Right, right, in the middle there, right. So we didn't get on. So I'm glad to see that we are on track with what we're.
Yeah, we haven't been frittering the money away. It's just in the bank.
Yeah, right, right.
Second comment, and this is just another thing to bring up, I'm going to suggest as a potential. We probably should consider setting up a committee or something to do a general manager evaluation.
Yes, I have been looking into that. Yes. So, yes, yeah, yeah. So.
In fairness to
yes,
the general manager.
In fairness to the general manager.
Absolutely.
Yes. Thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Because he's been here a year. Mm-hmm. He's been here just over a year.
Yep. So that can take place at, that'll be on the next agenda, correct?
I think so. I mean, that seems to make sense. We
should. Is that a closed session issue?
Yes.
Well, the evaluation itself is a closed session. We can talk about how we're going to go about doing it.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's required to do.
Yeah, all the gathering of information is not a closed session.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So, yes, we'll add that to the agenda, please. Okay.
Just a minor little thing.
Yes.
And it is minor, but just, you know, since I'm like a recycler and I try to conserve, is it possible that we could print this stuff out two-sided?
Yes.
You know, like, we've got like 70 pages today that would drop it down to 30-some pages, and times 10, that's practically a ream of paper.
Yeah. We can, now that, if it's, in the past it was different because this new packet was a new Adobe that was able to take all the individual documents and convert them into one. In the past, I've had to individually print them out. Some were sent double-sided, some weren't sent double-sided, and then once I'm doing a packet, I had to take the double-sided, create it to the one-sided. It was just a lot different.
So this is all about one big PDF?
Yes, it's one big PDF. Mm-hmm. That's why you have page numbers.
For cool, the first time, yeah.
So, yes, I can print it out. That was
I mean, if
thank you. It'll sure save our binder space.
I like that.
And then eventually just give it to you electronically and then there'll be no paper.
Yeah. Okay. I like my.
Do you want me to read off what we have for the April agenda?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure, why not? We're a little on the early side. Go
local
ahead.
Hazard mitigation grant. Why do I have that on there? Oh, good. Hopefully we'll
have some information for it.
Route restriction, you know, or something, these or other things. Appoint negotiators with the union. Board meeting video recommendation. The credit card policy. The reserve overview, you know, the precursor to the adoption of a restricted reserve policy, general manager evaluation process. Well, that's pretty small.
He still has three or four weeks.
That's just what we added today. Yes.
That's just from today, yes. Okay.
He's got weeks to add to it.
I move that we adjourn.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, meeting is adjourned.
Awesome.